visited upon the sun. The sins of the sun. The sins of the sun.
To WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Nurses in the Twin Cities were victims of economic warfare, according to the National Labor Relations Board. Upholding a 2002 ruling, the NLRB says that 23 nurses should be rewarded lost wages after they were refused employment while on strike against Fairview Health Services. The Minnesota Nurses Association brought the case in 2001 after it learned that the nurses were turned down for jobs at hospitals. The hospitals admitted refusing to hire the nurses, saying that because they negotiate the nurses' contracts jointly, they could legally apply economic pressure.
These students will not allow the mistreating of their workers, our friends, here at our university.
Recently, hundreds of students, workers, and union officials at the University of California, Santa Cruz presented a petition to the UC Bargaining Committee signed by 3,600 people in support of AFSCME workers seeking a fair contract. Refugio Marquez has been a custodian at UCSC for 8 years. He's had 2 back surgeries and is fighting cuts to worker wages and benefits.
I do hard work in here. Sometimes I have to do it for 2 people, and they don't care.
8,000 workers, ranging from bus drivers to food service employees on 9 campuses, have been working without a contract since June 30th. The Graduate Student Association, meanwhile, says it won't cross any future picket lines.
A national oil strike that would have crippled the world's 7th largest oil exporter has been temporarily averted. Nigeria's main labor union has decided to give that country's government a second chance after a promise to lower domestic fuel prices. Nigeria exports 2.5 million barrels of oil a day and is the 5th leading supplier of U.S. oil imports. In other news from Africa, cocoa workers on the Ivory Coast are concerned about their livelihood. The ports in the Ivory Coast ship 40% of the world's cocoa, and the threat of continued unrest and upheaval has worried traders during the market's main harvest season. Anti-French riots had recently closed the ports for 6 days.
In the past couple of years, a handful of companies have begun suing retired workers in order to cut their health care benefits. A 1998 federal court decision allowed GM to reduce retirement health care benefits for 50,000 salaried workers. GM had promised them health care in retirement in order to get them to accept early retirement. Union retirees are better protected by their contracts, but now even union retirees are being sued. The UAW and the steelworkers have gone to court to defend the retirees against this latest tactic by companies out to improve their bottom lines by cutting worker benefits.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. More than 40 new companies and nearly 9,000 jobs have been added to the TechsUnite offshore tracker website. According to the list, more than 300 companies with tech industry jobs in the United States are now offshoring. Reuters, Synopsys, Cadence, and Magma Design Automation have all joined the list of companies that offshore. The list of IT jobs being outsourced include intellectual property legal positions, data engineers, and designers.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
The wails of despair from progressive friends began pouring through my telephone very early on November 3rd. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? We'll have to move to Canada. I can't take another 4 years. It's so much to bear. I give up. Get a grip. Yes, the Bushites are back, and yes, it's going to be a miserable 4 years of grueling battles as they push their agenda of more war, more right-wing appointments to the courts, more giveaways to corporate power, more pollution, more cuts in public services, more assaults on Social Security, more secrecy, more shredding of our liberties, more, well, more Bush. But give up? Give up the fight for our essential American values, the values of fairness, justice, and opportunity for all? Surrender our nation's historic possibilities to these ideological zealots and corporate frontmen? Not a chance. What are we going to do? Fight back, that's what. First, recognize that we're fighting from strength and are tantalizingly close to winning. 49% of voters not only were with us in this election, but strongly with us, including more than 60% of young voters. Our grassroots organizing this time was stupendous, giving us new expertise, tools, and outreach to keep advancing. And you can count on the Bushites to give this year's non-voters and wary Bush voters more and more reasons to get active with us. Second, recognize that fighting for democracy is always a long-haul proposition. It took decades for America's founders to build enough public support to break with England. Likewise, the abolitionists, suffragists, populists, labor, civil rights, and other movements didn't achieve their historic successes on their first outing, and it'll require the same perseverance on our part. This is Jim Hightower saying, we've just begun to lift our country up. As Willie Nelson says, the early bird might get the worm, but it's the second mouse that gets the cheese.
The holiday taste of Sam's Club is here. Save time and money by shopping for all of your holiday business and home entertaining needs in one convenient stop. Visit the club this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, to sample a variety of delicious food perfect for any occasion. While you're there, you can pick up gifts for your employees, family, and friends. During this busy holiday season, don't miss your chance to shop, sample, and save on all of your business and home entertaining needs at the holiday taste of Sam's Club this weekend. Sam's Club, we're in business for small business.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. We have a great day today. A conservative alert, a Berlusconi alert. The second hour of our program, we're going to start our NLP for Activists class. But first, a special report from Borowitz.com. Bush outsources the State Department. President George W. Bush seized the opportunity presented by Colin Powell's resignation as Secretary of State to outsource the State Department to India, the White House confirmed today. With budget deficits spiraling out of control, the president saw a chance for significant cost savings by having all of the State Department's diplomatic functions handled by a single calling center in Bangalore. Starting in January, all nations interested in engaging the U.S. in a range of diplomatic communications will be able to do so by dialing one easy-to-remember toll-free number, the president said. Around the globe, world leaders bemoan the demise of the State Department, with France's Jacques Chirac offering perhaps the harshest words of criticism for the president's decision. World diplomacy cannot be put on hold with Muzak. But President Bush brushed aside Mr. Chirac's comment, telling the French president that if he had issues to discuss with the U.S., try us in the evening when calling volume is lighter. In Bangalore, Surjit Ramesh, 31, said he was very excited indeed about being the sole employee of the one-room calling center that's replacing the U.S. State Department. While Mr. Ramesh said he would have his hands full conducting all of the business of the State Department by himself, he said the White House gave him helpful tips to make his job easier. For example, if anyone with a French accent calls, I'm supposed to hang up. This from our report from Andy Borowitz, Borowitz.com, BorowitzReport.com, excuse me. On a more serious note, Ohio is beginning their recount, and or soon will be, or so we are told. And this, in large part, due to the efforts of two people, Michael Badnarik and David Cobb. And David Cobb, I think, is really the engine behind this. And David, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Tom, it's such a pleasure to be back on this program where we actually get a chance to talk real politics, but also do it with a little humor. I got to say, I was laughing out loud at the Borowitz report.
Well, Andy Borowitz just does great stuff, and we're really grateful that he's given us permission to use it on this show. You and I should note, you know, you and I know each other, and I'm just really glad to have you here. I'm pleased that you're a friend, and I'm really, really. Impressed by the work that you've been doing, both in this last election campaign and what you're doing right now. 136,483 votes is the margin that they say George Bush won Ohio by. And yet, now James Lee, the spokesman for the for Blackwell, the Secretary of State in Ohio and also the head of the Bush campaign in Ohio, dismissed this, according to CNSNews.com, dismissed the idea that a recount of Ohio's presidential voting was a certainty, as claimed by Cobb. A recount is impossible until the results are verified or certified, which Lee estimated would happen around December 6th, and separate recount requests must be filed with each county, Lee added. Is this actually going to happen, David?
Yes, it is. And let's stop, back up a moment, and I appreciate the opportunity to really get down to brass tacks.
Good.
The reality is 136,000 votes separate Kerry and Bush right now, but there are still at least 153,000 votes to be counted, which we don't know about yet. And isn't it interesting that Republican Secretary of State Blackwell has the final authority right now on deciding how and which of those votes get counted? Here's something else. And it is true that under law that we can't formally request the recount until the results are certified. The results must be certified under Ohio law by December 3rd. I'll tell you this, we are going to request a full statewide recount as soon as that certification takes place. It might happen earlier, but we are putting together the team on the ground to go into every single county, 88 counties in Ohio, and demand a full hand recount of every damned ballot that exists in the state of Ohio.
Now,
it's going to happen.
That's also,
Tom, why we're continuing. We've raised the filing fees. Now we need to raise the money necessary to put the on-the-ground organizing people to actually make the recount happen and then participate and observe it in a meaningful way.
Yeah.
And you know me, Tom, I'm an organizer. We've got good, solid people. We're putting together this team into place. We're going to make this recount happen.
That's great. And people can contribute to your efforts. I know you don't want to plug it, but I will for you at votecobb.org, VOTECOBB.ORG.
Well, thanks for that, Tom. And I also, since you'll plug my website, let me also just plug the No Stolen Elections people.
Okay.
That's No Stolen Elections with a plural on the end. Because there's
.org or
.org.
.org, okay.
Who are coming together to build a movement that says not only must we count every single vote in Ohio, but we need to have systemic reform in our elections that will ensure independent, nonpartisan administration of our elections, and number three, auditable paper trail ballots.
Yeah.
You know, Tom, you've really done a tremendous service, and I don't want to get into falling all over each other.
Mutual admiration society here, yeah.
But, you know, Tom, you've done a great service, as other writers have done, to really break the black box voting story. You know, we got a real problem on our hands, and the Green Party Cobb campaign is stepping forward to say we demand a full recount in Ohio, not because we think that it will or will not change the results. I mean, look, I think I would rather have Kerry in the White House than Bush. I don't make any bones about that. But I'm demanding this recount to provide the political space necessary for a healthy discussion about the voting rights violations that definitely occurred in Ohio, and to provide the political space necessary to build a movement to demand audible paper trail ballots in this country, so we can have confidence in the integrity of our elections.
And that's good and important work. A couple of questions here for you, David.
Yes.
I recall before the election, and you know, 2-3 days before the election, November 1st, October 30th, October 31st, there were these scattered news reports, and it seemed like this was not just something that happened to one person in West Wiscaloosa, Ohio, or whatever. But apparently it was systemic. There were these reports. And by the way, this reminded me of the thing in New Hampshire 4 years ago when the Democratic... boiler rooms, you know, where a bunch of people are sitting calling to get out the vote, when their phones were shut down for hours on the day of the election, or the day before the election, by, it turns out, Republican dirty tricks, by Republicans getting a hold of those phone numbers and then dialing into them with modems over and over and over and just locking up their phone lines. And there was actually I don't know if there's a criminal prosecution, but this got outed, you know, and this reminded me that of all these people, registered Democrats in Ohio, being called and told that they should vote in a different precinct than the one that they thought they were supposed to vote in. Then, of course, they show up in that different precinct and they're told that they're not on the list. Some of them just go away shaking their heads. Some of them fill out provisional ballots. And there's all these provisional ballots in Ohio. I'm wondering if you know, David, if the percentage of provisional ballots in Ohio is significantly different than it is in other states, and if that might be a consequence of a concerted effort by somebody to direct Democrats to the wrong precinct so that they would end up having to cast provisional rather than actual ballots.
Tom, here's the preliminary results that we're getting. The statistical difference on casting of provisional ballots is the same in Ohio and every other swing state, but in the non-swing states, significantly less. How about that?
Oh, that's interesting. And is it because of these boiler room calls that I just described, or is there something else?
We don't know yet, and that's why we need this kind of investigation. And I do want to stop for a moment, Tom, and say that part of the reason this recount is going on is not just the generosity and the demand, really, grassroots people going to that website and making the donation to make it happen, but also because on the ground, people in Ohio, upon hearing these results, organized hearings that took place Saturday and yesterday. And at these hearings, please let me share with your listeners what the testimony reveals.
Sure.
We now know that there were jumping screen problems in Ohio where people attempted to cast a vote for some other presidential candidate, and the screen automatically defaulted to Bush.
Right.
We know for a fact, of course, and you've broken this story, that there was one precinct where less than 700 people voted, yet the machines attempted to record almost 4,000 votes for Bush.
Right.
We now know for a fact that there were intolerably long lines in African-American communities where, because the Republican Secretary of State decided to allocate voting machines in such a way that there were not enough machines in these African-American communities. We know for a fact that there are 92,000 so-called, quote, spoiled votes. That is, ballots that are not being counted because they claim that there is either an overvote or undervote.
Right.
We know for a fact
Shades
that there are 153,000, I'm sorry?
Shades of Florida.
Shades of Florida, because the so-called spoiled ballots really are the hanging chad problem. Remember that Ohio doesn't use exclusively these black box voting systems. They still use punch cards in many precincts. And in those precincts, remember, even if there's a chad just hanging on, many times the machine won't count it.
Right.
92,000. Think about it, Tom. We got less than 140,000 votes separating the alleged winner from the loser,
right,
and yet we've got 92,000 ballots that need to be looked at again. Plus,
Okay,
we got 153,000 provisionals that haven't even been counted.
Now, Teed Rockwell published this piece on RiseForNews.net. I don't know if you've seen this. 93,000 extra votes in Cuyahoga County. Is there an explanation for this? Bay Village has 13,710 registered voters, but 18,663 ballots were cast. And he goes through precinct by precinct. Beachwood, 9,900 registered voters, 13,000 ballots cast. Bedford, 9,000 registered voters, 14,000 ballots cast. Bedford Heights, 8,000 registered voters, 13,000 ballots cast, and virtually every single one. I mean, he goes through this long list, and he adds it all up as 93,000 more votes were cast just in Cuyahoga County than there are registered voters. Is this like some, you know, are they like comparing last year's registration list to this year's vote list? Or?
We're looking into that as well, and that's yet another, look, that's yet another of the litany. I mean, we could kill on. We know for a fact that long-time voters literally disappeared from their voting rolls. We don't know why or how. We know for a fact that people were required to show more identification than is necessary and allowed to be asked for under Ohio law. We've got all these reports. We know that the exit polling numbers are completely skewed. I mean, what we have is a huge cloud over this election. But, Tom, let's take a moment. Because corporate media is attempting to manufacture consent around the lie that this was a clean and fair election.
Oh, no doubt about it. The only corporate media that has even discussed this is Keith Olbermann, and he talked about it last week, and now this week he's on vacation all of a sudden.
How about that? And it wasn't a scheduled vacation.
Interesting.
The reports that we're getting is that he is being reprimanded. So we'll find out what happens, Tom. But I want the listeners of the Tom Hartman Show to realize that it was only outlets like this program, like community radio, where this story stayed alive, and through the internet community. So those of you with access to the email, please go to our website at votecobb.org. Cut and paste that announcement and send it to your friends.
There you go.
Don't let the corporate media manufacture consent around a lie of a clean and fair election.
Well said. David, we've got to take a break here, but we'll pick this up on the other side. We have a caller in Maryland who has a question for you. If you have a question for David Cobb, our number 1-866-889-8894. It's 20 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman Radio Program. We will be right back. I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Economics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Economics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy. Again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a direct TV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. 24 minutes after the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We're talking with David Cobb, www.votecobb.org, if you want to help out his effort to get the vote recounted in the state of Ohio. Our number, 1-866-889-8894. Our chat room you can get to by going to tomhartman.com. Interesting conversation in there about the state of the media going on right now. But, David, let's go to Nancy in, I believe it's Bowie, Maryland?
Yeah, Bowie, Maryland.
Hey, Nancy, what's on your mind?
Hi, how you doing, Tom? I'm glad that you guys are saying this. I may be getting a little paranoid right now, but every time I have a serious radio, but every time you and Randy come on and start talking about this.
Whoa, you're getting some, we got some feedback there, Nancy. Nancy, are you still there? I'm going to put Nancy on hold. There's something. Oh, Nancy, you've got to turn down your radio, although there shouldn't be feedback because there should be a delay. We'll try punching up Nancy one more time. Nancy, are you still there? Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay.
My radio's off.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, okay, sorry. What I was saying is that I'm getting a little paranoid because every time you and Randy start talking about the vote, I have a serious radio and the signal goes down.
Well,
so I don't know.
It's probably just an airplane flying over, you know, or something like
that.
Yeah,
I went out to Cleveland. They asked for lawyers and law students to volunteer. It was called election protection. And so I was out there, and these are just some comments on things that I observed. Number one, I was stationed in East Cleveland, and there were three precincts close by. And I've been voting for a long time. I've never experienced the problem of broken machines, and there were quite a number of broken machines in these precincts. But the other thing that I think is very significant is they say the first news is generally the most accurate news. And when we went to bed about 2 o'clock in the morning, there was an announcement that there were almost 300,000 provisional ballots. But then when we woke up in the morning, the news was there was only 136,000 provisional ballots. So what happened to all those other provisional ballots overnight?
Excellent question, Nancy. David, do you know the answer? By the way, I saw that picture of the ballots being loaded onto a truck with a Bush Cheney bumper sticker on it. You know, that's been floating around the web.
I haven't seen that one, but I can tell you this, that Nancy was part of a tremendous effort on the ground, election protection. And here's something interesting. John Turley, a law professor who was one of the commentators for major network news, has reported that everyone in the major network news expected Ohio to be not only involved in recounts but litigations because of the reports that were flooding in on the night of the election, exactly as Nancy's just described.
Yeah.
I think that it's worth asking, where is John Kerry?
Yeah, well, you know, I assume that you've seen that article that's floating around about, you know, this is really the best strategy for Kerry to follow because it keeps him untainted, yet, you know, a concession speech is not a legal document. He can, you know, if anybody actually uncovered evidence, he can jump back in. I don't know if it's, you know, making nice or what, but.
Well, I mean, I don't know. If it's one thing to remain mum and not demand the recount the way we've done, the Green Party standing up firmly.
Yeah.
It's another thing to actually concede.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, if that was, I think that that is at best an attempt to provide an explanation.
Yeah. Well, in the 30 seconds we have left here, David, instead of getting into where's Kerry, because that's a question, of course, everybody's wondering, we don't have an answer for. Just real quickly, again, tell people how they can get involved in your effort.
Well, go to our website at www.votecob.org and make a donation online or volunteer to help in the recount effort. You can do that online as well. You can send a donation via regular mail to P.O. Make it out to Cobb LaMarche, COBB/LAMARCHE, P.O. Box 693, Eureka, California, 95502, and get involved in the larger movement to demand audible paper trail ballots and independent election administrators and systemic voting change at NoStolenElections.org.
NoStolenElections.org, VoteCobb.org, great sites. David, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for what you do.
Yeah, you keep it up too, David. 29 minutes past the hour.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. In vacuums, bagless is a dirty word. In fact, they're filthy. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. My newest hypoallergenic 8-pound Orrick XL uses triple-wall disposable filter bags. Try my new vacuum free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200. Orrick, the clean alternative to bagless vacuums.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Nurses in the Twin Cities were victims of economic warfare, according to the National Labor Relations Board. Upholding a 2002 ruling, the NLRB says that 23 nurses should be rewarded lost wages after they were refused employment while on strike against Fairview Health Services. The Minnesota Nurses Association brought the case in 2001 after it learned that the nurses were turned down for jobs at hospitals. The hospitals admitted refusing to hire the nurses, saying that because they negotiate the nurses' contracts jointly, they could legally apply economic pressure.
These students will not allow the mistreating of their workers, our friends, here at our university.
Recently, hundreds of students, workers, and union officials at the University of California, Santa Cruz, presented a petition to the UC Bargaining Committee, signed by 3,600 people in support of AFSCME workers seeking a fair contract. Refugio Marquez has been a custodian at UCSC for 8 years. He's had 2 back surgeries and is fighting cuts to worker wages and benefits.
I do hard work in here. Sometimes I have to do it for 2 people, and they don't care.
8,000 workers, ranging from bus drivers to food service employees on 9 campuses, have been working without a contract since June 30th. The Graduate Student Association, meanwhile, says it won't cross any future picket lines.
A national oil strike that would have crippled the world's 7th largest oil exporter has been temporarily averted. Nigeria's main labor union has decided to give that country's government a second chance after a promise to lower domestic fuel prices. Nigeria exports 2.5 million barrels of oil a day and is the 5th leading supplier of U.S. oil imports. In other news from Africa, cocoa workers on the Ivory Coast are concerned about their livelihood. The ports in the Ivory Coast ship 40% of the world's cocoa, and the threat of continued unrest and upheaval has worried traders during the market's main harvest season. Anti-French riots had recently closed the ports for 6 days.
In the past couple of years, a handful of companies have begun suing retired workers in order to cut their health care benefits. A 1998 federal court decision allowed GM to reduce retirement health care benefits for 50,000 salaried workers. GM had promised them health care in retirement in order to get them to accept early retirement. Union retirees are better protected by their contracts, but now even union retirees are being sued. The UAW and the steel workers have gone to court to defend the retirees against this latest tactic by companies out to improve their bottom lines by cutting worker benefits.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. More than 40 new companies and nearly 9,000 jobs have been added to the TechsUnite offshore tracker website. According to the list, more than 300 companies with tech industry jobs in the United States are now offshoring. Reuters, Synopsys, Cadence, and Magma Design Automation have all joined the list of companies that offshore. The list of IT jobs being outsourced include intellectual property legal positions, data engineers, and designers.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Just a push of a button, just a touch of a screen.
That's all it takes.
Just a push of a button. The future. Come try our voting machine.
Ah, yes, what a pleasure.
Voting machine.
It's the voting machine song from the Billionaires from Bush for Bush folks. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. TomHartman.com, our website, if you'd like to drop in. If you drop into our chat room, press live chat. If you want to drop into the message board, some 30, 40,000 messages on there, a bunch of folks having conversations about all the issues of the day. Click the message board link, articles on democracy for the pieces I've been writing for a couple of years on these various topics. And, you know, the larger issue of the vote, and it's so great that David Cobb is doing this work and that they have now raised enough money to pay the filing fees. Now the actual work begins, and of course, they need more. So votecobb.org is the place to go for that if you want to support that effort. But the real large issue here is that the idea of American democracy is that we, the people, own our country. We own our commons. We collectively get together and say, we are going to provide certain things for ourselves and take care of certain things for ourselves. We're going to make sure that we have police departments. We're going to make sure we have fire departments. We're going to make sure we have an army to protect us, Navy and Air Force. We're going to make sure that our water is drinkable, that our air is clean. At least we're going to do that before Bush became president. Anyhow, we're going to make sure, that our public education system. These are all parts of the commons, the stuff that we collectively own, and the way that we administer our commons, our national parks, our road system, our air traffic control system. The way that we administer our commons is through our government, which sort of theoretically owns them. People say, well, the government owns all those things. But we own the government. That's the unique thing. That was the unique experiment that was started in 1776. How about instead of a king owning the government or instead of a pope owning the government, what if we the people were to get together and own the government? And this was a surprising and radical and, just... Had never been considered before idea, really. And here, the preamble to the United States Constitution, we, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. We, the people of the United States of America. In other words, we own it. It's ours. And we tell our government how to handle these things, how to take care of these things. And the way that we tell them how to do it is by voting for elected representatives. So in a very real sense, the most important of all the commons is our vote. And now we have a situation where largely at the aggressive pushing of the Republican Party with the Help America Vote Act in 2002, we have privatized our vote. We have turned our vote over to private for-profit corporations, most of them in various ways affiliated with the Republican Party or people within the Republican Party, and openly advocating the Republican Party. And these private for-profit corporations tell us that we have no right to see what happens once we cast our vote. We cast a vote by pushing a touch screen or filling in a little button or filling in an arrow or punching a chat or whatever. And then they take that vote and they process it through an optical scanner or the computer that aggregates the touch screens or whatever. They process it in a way that is completely invisible. And when we say, we'd like to see how you process that vote, we'd like you to be able to prove to us that every fifth vote for a particular candidate didn't just like vanish. And they say, you have no right to know that. our software is a trade secret. And this, in my opinion, is the real felony against democracy that has been perpetrated against we the people, largely over the last decade in the United States and aggressively in the last 3 years. And it's one that we must roll back. Private for-profit corporations are great at making shoes. They're great at, you know, they run restaurants. I mean, there's all kinds of wonderful things. You know, thank God for free enterprise. We have built a great nation with it. However, there are some things that we the people do for ourselves, thank you very much. Not for the profit of the stockholders of Diebold or ES&S or Sequoia. And one of those things is voting. So I just, you know, I just, it's really important that we hold in mind at all times that this is really the large issue here. And that in the United States, we go back to a system where civil servants who are accountable to we the people and who are not partisan, their job is not partisan. Their job doesn't depend on whether they help or promote a particular candidate. Career civil servants who are being observed by partisan people, you know, the Republican, Democratic, Green Party, whatever they get, you know, look over their shoulders. But that career civil servants, as it has been done for, as it was done for over 200 years in the United States, are handling our vote in a way that is absolutely transparent. And if we must have machines, that the software that runs those machines be open source code. In other words, it is software that you can publish on the web, you can read it, you can say, yes, this software will actually work. This will actually, you know, accurately and carefully keep track of the vote, and you know, and it's secure and it's safe and it can't be hacked and all that kind of, just very straightforward. You know, why should we be hiding this stuff? Time for our Berlusconi alert for the day. Yes, you remember Silvio Berlusconi, the small-time crook and small businessman in Italy who, in the course of his various business ventures, bought a radio station and then bought another one and then bought a TV station and then another one and then a newspaper and then another one and pretty soon owned all of the radio networks, all of the TV networks, except for the one owned by the state itself, which he now runs, and most of the newspapers. Over 90% of the media in Italy directly owned or strongly influenced by Silvio Berlusconi. And once he had this level of control over the media machine of Italy, he ran for prime minister. And guess what? He won. Well, now the Sardinian villa. This is from the Wall Street Journal. A secret boat tunnel gets Italy's Berlusconi into some hot water. The Sardinian villa of Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi is the scene of a building boom, they note. He's one of the richest guys, I believe he is the richest man in Italy now. Although his business partner was recently sent to prison for bribery, he actually got a law passed that he couldn't be prosecuted while he was prime minister. This is strange stuff. He got another law that said that his media conglomerate, Gruppo Mediaset, could continue to grow and expand. But anyhow, he's building this, you know, villa is not quite the word. I mean, he's added an artificial lake to his estate, a soccer field, 5 swimming pools, a cactus garden with 2,000 specimens, a 400-seat neoclassical amphitheater, to quote this article by Gabriel Kahn in the Wall Street Journal. And this is in northern Sardinia. And it's in an ecologically sensitive area. And in May, to quote the Wall Street Journal, a reporter for a local paper noticed massive scaffolding surrounding a cave on the cliffs beneath the estate. Had the prime minister obtained all the permits required for construction in such a delicate area, he asked in his article. The day after the story ran, reports the Wall Street Journal, the Interior Ministry issued an order. All matters relating to the villa were to be protected under a state secrecy law in the interest of national security. Yes, indeed. If you don't like the way Silvio's doing it, it's a state secret. Not unlike how some things are being done in Washington, D.C. now. Many people are suggesting, you know, there is this story that has been promulgated in the mainstream and corporate media in America, that George Bush won the election, assuming that he did, that George Bush won the election which is, by the way, in my mind, it's still an open assumption. But nonetheless, assuming that George Bush won the election, that he won because of values voters, that the Christians mobilized their churches and they got out and voted in record numbers because they were horrified by the idea of gay marriage, the idea that maybe the under God would be removed from the Pledge of Allegiance, things like this, you know, these so-called values issues. I mean, somehow they managed to completely ignore values like caring for the poor, feeding the hungry, making sure, visiting those in prison, housing the homeless. Those values all got pushed to the side. But all these people, this is the mythology, all these people turned out because they were scared to death that those two gay guys down the street who've been living together for a dozen years might end up actually getting married. Turns out it's a myth. It's an absolute myth. I mean, this is really remarkable. And when you discover who actually did turn out in larger numbers, you're going to be perhaps amazed, or you may say, well, yeah, makes perfect sense. Phil Klinker. Is a political scientist. He runs a blog called PolySci, PolySigh. And he, as reported by Rick Perlstein in an article called "It's the Wealth Stupid," he did a simple exercise. He multiplied the turnout among a certain group by the percentage who went for Bush yields a number electoral statisticians call performance. Among heavy churchgoers, Bush's performance last time was 25%. The turnout was 42%. The percentage, though, at 59%. You do the math, it's 25%. This time it was also 25%. No change. Slightly lower turnout. Last time they turned out 42%. This time only 41%. Slightly higher vote for Bush. Last time they voted for Bush 59%. This time 61%. So where did the lion's share of the extra votes come from that gave George Bush his mighty, mighty mandate of 51%, asks Rick Perlstein in this article. Two of those points, Klinker said when reached by phone, came solely from people making over $100,000. In other words, it wasn't the so-called values voters, it wasn't the homophobes, it wasn't the Christians who gave George Bush his electoral victory. It was people who make over $100,000 a year. Their portion of the electorate went from 15% in 2000 to 18% this year. Support for Bush among them went from 54% to 58%. Thus, they took him from 49% of the vote to 51%. If the numbers are all accurate, it's rich people, or people who earn over $100,000 a year, who voted, who 54% of them had voted for Bush 4 years ago, 58% of them voted for him this time, and 3% more of them, from 15 to 18%, actually showed up to vote. These are the folks who gave him his mandate. You look at gay marriage. Klinker ran his a regression analysis comparing his 2000 and 2004 totals by state and suggested that though the measures didn't hurt Bush, they didn't help him either. If anything, he writes, Bush's vote is a bit lower than expected in states that did have such a measure on the ballot. This, by the way, is not, as Rick Perlstein notes, what your TV has told you. Here you had Dee Dee Myers, former Clinton press secretary, going, most of the last 100 years, politics has been defined by economic interest. That's no longer true. Well, it turns out it is true. What's amazing is that the Republican talking points of it was the religious moral values folks who pushed us over the top have drowned out the actual statistical information. I mean, this is pretty remarkable. But, you know, the Republicans realize this, and that's why, as Democracy Now! Noted, Amy Goodman, I mean, the majority of voters disagree with major portions of Bush's priorities for the next 4 years. The vast majority said Bush should cut the country's enormous deficit rather than slash taxes. The majority also said they backed the nomination of Supreme Court judges who would preserve abortion rights. And more than a quarter of voters polled said Iraq should be the country's top priority. Only 2% said reforming the country's tax code was a top priority. And yet, what's the first thing that he says when he gets elected? He says, we've got to reform the tax code. And we've got to do tort reform. We've got to stop letting people sue corporations if they're injured. These were not things that people voted. Well, actually, it turns out those were the people, wealthy people, who put George Bush over the top. And he's not talking about gay marriage anymore. I mean, you know, they'll throw a bone to the Christian conservatives, but they know that it was rich folks who really put them over the top. 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number. Jimmy in Missouri on the line. Hey, Jimmy, what's on your mind?
Hey, I got two comments for you.
Sure.
You said that you're basically making the point that Christians don't care about poor and things like that. You said that a minute ago.
No, I didn't say that. What I said was that the Bush campaign was suggesting that moral values mean being opposed to gay marriage. And in my opinion, well, frankly, I actually read the Bible, and I don't see where Jesus ever once mentioned homosexuality. Not once.
Yeah.
But he was pretty explicit about how we should handle poor people.
I'm not going to argue about that. I personally don't care. The gay issue doesn't really affect me. But to sit there and think that Christians don't care about other issues is wrong.
Oh, I agree. As, you know, speaking as a Christian, I agree.
Okay. And my other point is, you define a rich person as making over 100 grand a year. That's your definition?
Well, you know, frankly, between you and I don't think so. There are a lot of cities in this country where you've got to make over 100 grand a year just to live, you know, in New York, San Francisco, things like that. But I'd love to see a breakdown of that. You know, was it mostly people between 100,000 and 200,000 who showed up, or was it mostly people between 200 and 500,000, or was it mostly people over a million, or was it mostly people over 5 million? We don't know. What we do know is that the one group that actually showed up in larger numbers than 4 years ago was not conservative Christian voters. They showed up in exactly the same proportions. The one group that showed up in larger numbers was people who earn over $100,000 a year. I agree with you. They're not necessarily rich. But I think that, you know, what it says is that when John Kerry said that he's going to repeal the tax cut for people making more than $200,000 a year, he might have been shooting himself in the foot. You know, it might not have been the best election strategy. Jimmy, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank or former Enron lobbyist Ed Gillespie's Republican National Committee.
My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information, available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from
dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a wind feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. On Friday in Santa Cruz, California, 45 people turned out for a solidarity rally in support of embattled workers at Sunshine Villa. Wind correspondent Vinny Lombardo has more.
Santa Cruz should be where?
Sunshine Villa is unfair.
Yolanda Moya has worked at Sunshine Villa for more than 3 years as a certified nursing assistant. Since February, Moya has been a key organizer in the SEIU contract drive. She says workers at Sunshine Villa are underpaid and receive too few health benefits for the heavy workload.
Many times we was short staffing.
Workers also complain of mistreatment by Sunshine Villa managers. Moya says the situation results in poor service to the residents. Recently, she discarded a table ornament that a resident had been chewing on. Moya says it was a health hazard. Managers apparently disagreed.
On October the 5th, they suspend me because I throw away a plastic vegetables in the garbage. And on October 12th, they terminate me with no reason.
Union reps believe Moya was fired for her organizing efforts. In July, workers at Sunshine Villa voted by a margin of 4-1 in favor of union representation. Joe Keffer, organizing director with the SEIU Local 415, says Sunshine Villa lawyers immediately filed 25 challenges with the regional director of the NLRB in Oakland. When these were dismissed, Sunshine Villa attorneys appealed to Washington. Last week, Keffer says the NLRB certified the union.
So now we can go in, start raising the issues, and we'll start negotiating our first contract. We expect that they're going to come in there and fight us aggressively and challenge every word that we put on the table.
Joan Bosworth, executive director of Sunshine Villa, snubbed repeated attempts for comments on this story. For the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Vinny Lombardo in Santa Cruz, California.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Sometimes it's bad when the going gets tough.
Yeah, but you push through. Welcome back.
Yeah, we're looking in the mirror.
Tom Hartman here with you. 5 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Josh in Tennessee on the line. Hey, Josh, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. I hope you can hear me okay.
Yeah, it sounds just fine.
Well, I just wanted to say I've been listening for a little over a year. I think you're doing a great job. Thank you very much for what you're doing. And keep on plugging away. It's just what we need.
Well, thank you, Josh. That's very kind of you. I appreciate your kind words.
I just wanted to say that. I didn't have too much else to say. I'm a over-the-road trucker. I've been out here a couple of years, a little over a couple of years, and not really sure how somebody like me can get that involved in anything except my job, you know?
Well, it's just, here it is, Josh, tag, you're it, right? I mean, in other words, pass it along. Just tell people you know. You know, we have to wake people up. That's the work that we have to do is spreading the word. And I'm sure you're doing that, and so I think that's great. And thank you for the kind words. I do appreciate it, and for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah, that kind of feedback keeps me going. Did you see this apology for Bush website, this sorryeverybody.com? This is amazing, this the phenomena of this. By the way, just a quick reminder, in the second half hour of next hour of the next hour of this program, the second hour of the program, we're going to try something new here. We're going to do an online on air class, and that 17-minute segment starts at the bottom of the hour on neurolinguistic programming, how you can use language to more effectively communicate. You know, it's going to specifically politically, but it's stuff you can apply to home, business, relationships, everything. Anyhow, this website, sorryeverybody.com, this kid puts it up at the University of California. They had to ask him to move it to another server because it was using 82% of the University of Southern California's total web capacity. The thing got 27 million hits. pictures of, you know, people saying sorry to the world. 2,200 pictures of contrite Americans holding up placards expressing their sorrow at the victory of George W. Bush and basically, you know, apologizing. Sorry, world, we tried, and signed half of America. And this is really remarkable. This guy, James Zetlin, put the thing up. And just, you know, kind of whimsically just put it up. And now he's got over 1,000 pictures that other people want to post. One man's sign reads, this one for the 55 million Americans who voted against Mr. Bush would like to apologize for the 59 million idiots who did. It's you know, we're so sorry. On it goes and on it goes. You know, sorry, everybody. The inmates are running the asylum again. Please don't hate half of us. Fascinating. Fascinating phenomenon. Yeah, it'll be a hula hoop thing. It'll fade out. But it's... I think people need to let it out. So, and they certainly have been here on this program. Truth and common sense in broadcasting. Tom Hartman here with you.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Nurses in the Twin Cities were victims of economic warfare, according to the National Labor Relations Board. Upholding a 2002 ruling, the NLRB says that 23 nurses should be rewarded lost wages after they were refused employment while on strike against Fairview Health Services. The Minnesota Nurses Association brought the case in 2001 after it learned that the nurses were turned down for jobs at hospitals. The hospitals admitted refusing to hire the nurses, saying that because they negotiate the nurses' contracts jointly, they could legally apply economic pressure.
These students will not allow the mistreating of their workers, our friends, here at our university.
Recently, hundreds of students, workers, and union officials at the University of California, Santa Cruz, presented a petition to the UC Bargaining Committee, signed by 3,600 people in support of AFSCME workers seeking a fair contract. Refugio Marquez has been a custodian at UCSC for 8 years. He's had 2 back surgeries and is fighting cuts to worker wages and benefits.
I do hard work in here. Sometimes I have to do it for 2 people, and they don't care.
8,000 workers, ranging from bus drivers to food service employees on 9 campuses, have been working without a contract since June 30th. The Graduate Student Association, meanwhile, says it won't cross any future picket lines.
A national oil strike that would have crippled the world's 7th largest oil exporter has been temporarily averted. Nigeria's main labor union has decided to give that country's government a second chance after a promise to lower domestic fuel prices. Nigeria exports 2.5 million barrels of oil a day and is the 5th leading supplier of U.S. oil imports. In other news from Africa, cocoa workers on the Ivory Coast are concerned about their livelihood. The ports in the Ivory Coast ship 40% of the world's cocoa, and the threat of continued unrest and upheaval has worried traders during the market's main harvest season. Anti-French riots had recently closed the ports for 6 days.
In the past couple of years, a handful of companies have begun suing retired workers in order to cut their health care benefits. A 1998 federal court decision allowed GM to reduce retirement health care benefits for 50,000 salaried workers. GM had promised them health care in retirement in order to get them to accept early retirement. Union retirees are better protected by their contracts, but now even union retirees are being sued. The UAW and the steelworkers have gone to court to defend the retirees against this latest tactic by companies out to improve their bottom lines by cutting worker benefits.
markets.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. More than 40 new companies and nearly 9,000 jobs have been added to the TechsUnite Offshore Tracker website. According to the list, more than 300 companies with tech industry jobs in the United States are now offshoring. Reuters, Synopsys, Cadence, and Magma Design Automation have all joined the list of companies that offshore. The list of IT jobs being outsourced include intellectual property legal positions, data engineers, and designers.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
The dumbest thing that a political party can do is to abandon its reason for existence and try to become a pale imitation of the other party. Yet this is exactly what some of the so-called political pros are prescribing for Democrats. The latest conventional wisdom from these insiders is that Bush's election is a triumph of moral values over such big issues as war and the economy. George W., they say, bluntly professes that he's guided by God, thus causing evangelical Christians to vote for him, even against their economic self-interest. Therefore, they assert, Democrats can't win until they get like George and start appealing to Christian fundamentalists. Nonsense! Certainly, the working people and poor folks who are in those churches must be appealed to by Democrats, but not like George, not on the narrow basis used by Republicans, God, guns, and gays. Rather, Democratic candidates must openly profess, by word and deed, the deeply held fundamental moral values that the party was created to represent: fairness, justice, and opportunity for all. This is high moral ground, which the Bushites routinely desecrate with virtually all of their policies and actions. Yet it's ground that Democrats senselessly have abandoned. It's not that evangelical working-class Christians voted against their own economic self-interest on November 2nd, but that the Kerry campaign had failed to appeal to it with any clarity or credibility. The candidate himself was aloof, elitist, and surrounded by upscale professionals, and the campaign gave little sense that a Kerry administration would be an FDR-JFK-LBJ champion of America's underdogs. This is Jim Hightower saying, yes, Democrats must talk more directly about values, the core Democratic values that make the party important. These are not only the values that founded America, but in church terms, they're the values preached and practiced by Jesus.
I have these nightmares. This taco, not just an ordinary taco, but this big evil taco is haunting me.
Guacamole.
You see, I was exposed to credit cards in college, and I wasn't the most responsible person back then.
Go, go, go!
I mean, I heard the words credit card and thought, hey, hey, free money! Plane ticket to spring break? Credit card. New skis? Credit card. 135 taco dinners? Bam! Credit card. But hey, it's not too late to do something about your credit. Get Score Power from Equifax.com. Score Power gives you your credit report, credit score, and it puts you on the road toward the credit you deserve for just $14.95. So, check out Equifax.com today and get that taco you ate 7 years ago out of your life.
Get Score Power at Equifax.com or 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Adios, taco.
Get the power. Score Power at Equifax.com.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. 7 minutes after the top of the second hour of our program. It might be a good time, I think, now to, you know, what's up with Arlen Specter? It's very interesting, this whole little drama that's playing out. I predicted before the election that after the election, obviously the Republicans were going to take the House and probably the Senate, whether or not they took the presidency, that there would be a lot of bloodletting among the Republicans because there is a battle going on within the Republican Party for the heart and soul of that party. And there are basically three factions. There's the traditional old-style conservatives. You might call them the Dirksen-Goldwater conservatives, who are now more often than not referred to as rhinos or moderates. There are the neocons, who used to be referred to as commie pinkos. By and large, most of the neocons came out of the leftist anti-war movement of the 60s. And now are utopianists. I mean, they think that they can create heaven on earth by just letting the free market absolutely run everything, and that you can just instantly create democracy anywhere by shoving it down people's throats with enough bombs and enough guns. And then you've got the cynics and the power brokers. And who are willing to pretty much say or do anything just to stay in power. And so this incredible battle is going on within the Republican Party. And there are people who actually take this all seriously. They call themselves religious conservatives, and think that that they're more than just convenient voters for the Republican Party. They don't realize how they have been played like a fiddle. And so, they take this stuff seriously. So here we have today's conservative alert. This is from conservativealerts.com. Alert! Your calls, faxes, and emails are having an impact in our fight to stop Senator Arlen Specter from taking over as chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Our members have sent over 120,000 faxes to all 54 Republican senators, plus tens of thousands of emails have been sent and phone calls made to GOP members of the committee demanding that they choose a conservative to head the committee that will decide whether President Bush's judicial nominations will make it to the Supreme Court. Specter is a liberal and was responsible for borking President Reagan's nominee, Robert Bork. He's proud of doing that, and he must be stopped from ever doing it again. Now they go on to say, but it's time to hone in on one man who could have the most impact in keeping this liberal Republican in name only from becoming the gatekeeper for judicial nominees. And now these guys, they're holding up as their salvation. Senator Rick Santorum! And then they quote Timothy Carney. Santorum is the guy, right? If he goes against his fellow senator from Pennsylvania, Arlen Specter. If he does, other conservative senators will certainly follow his lead. If Santorum will walk point, his conservative colleagues will follow. But Santorum, writes conservativealerts.com, Santorum needs encouragement from us. We need to flood Senator Santorum's office with emails, phone calls, faxes, and letters telling him to oppose Specter as Judiciary Committee Chairman. And, of course, send a little money along to this group. So our conservative alert for the day is, are they going to do away with Arlen Specter? Well, interestingly, Alan Murray, who writes a column called Political Capital in the Wall Street Journal and is the Washington bureau chief of CNBC, a reasonable conservative, and I realize, no, it's not necessarily an oxymoron. And he, in today's paper, today's Wall Street Journal, has an interesting column on this. It's called Repentant Specter, Arlen Specter, May Accommodate Tort Reform Push. And he lays out what's really going on here. And this is the story that you're not going to hear on the evening news. Again, in the Wall Street Journal, it's like the power class talking to itself. And he goes on to point out, first of all, that Specter stuck his foot in it. That he put his foot in his mouth. He blew it by talking about Roe v. Wade and the Supreme Court. And he says, this was certain to enrage evangelical Christian groups who believe they deserve credit for reelecting President Bush and are happy for an early chance to flex their muscles. They've launched a vigorous effort to deny Senator Specter the chairmanship, this of the Senate Judiciary Committee. And their protest mail is giving the Capitol Post Office a pre-Christmas headache. But then he points out, and this is the, Alan Murray, the truth teller here, where it can afford to be told, in the Wall Street Journal, knowing that the average person, the average American, certainly the average working American, doesn't read the Wall Street Journal, the Republican elite certainly does. And so he says, lost in the abortion brouhaha are equally deep concerns many business groups harbor about the Pennsylvania lawmaker who has long been an ally of the nation's trial lawyers. And here's where it comes out. What corporate America is really worried about with regard to Arlen Specter, and the reason why they're willing to let the religious anti-abortion folks do the heavy lifting on this is that they're really concerned about the fact that they want to get rid of the ability of you and I to sue large corporations if they intentionally do things that harm us. You know, remember the tobacco lawsuits? I mean, good heavens. And you know, they just don't want that to happen again. And so, well, in fact, to quote Alan Murray, he says, they know, this being, you know, people in the CEOs. In fact, he says, it is the hyenas of the trial bar who loom largest in the nightmares of corporate CEOs. And then he goes on to add, they know from personal experience the headaches that class action lawsuits have caused in their boardrooms. For big business, the defeat of the trial lawyers was Election Day's sweetest victory. And here's where it gets really interesting. Arlen Specter's son, Shannon Specter, is a trial lawyer. He works in Philadelphia. His firm is called Klein and Specter. And they specialize in lawsuits, again quoting Alan Murray, specialize in lawsuits against doctors. And so he says, in the election's wake, and this Alan Murray really nails this well, he says, in the election's wake, business lobbyists have been salivating over the prospect that legal reform bills would be the first measures to benefit from the new political climate. In other words, isn't it great? We've got all Republicans in House, Senate, and the presidency. We can pass laws that make it harder and harder and harder for individual people to sue corporations and easier for corporations to shrug off these lawsuits and even to sue individuals. I mean, the Wall Street Journal reported last week on this epidemic, this explosion of lawsuits by corporations against people who used to work for them who have pensions, you know, trying to deny them their pensions, which we'll get into in a few moments. But anyhow, he says, this is a Center for Responsive Politics. It says, this is a Ted DeHaven of the National Taxpayers Union, Alan Murray quoting him. Why would Republicans, after defeating Senators John Kerry, Edwards, and Daschle, hand the Judiciary Committee gavel to someone who shares this triumvirate's disdain for tort reform? Alan Murray goes on to point out that business groups are not sticking their necks out on this thing. They're not loudly speaking out against Specter the way that the anti-abortion folks are. And the main reason is because they don't expect that it's going to succeed, and they don't want to burn up their political capital. But they're very, very happy to see Specter wounded. They're very happy to see him put in his place. And, in fact, they're hoping that this putting in his place of Arlen Specter is going to work to their benefit. As Alan Murray wraps up his article, and I it's a fascinating read. Wall Street Journal today. In fact, I recommend you read the column, Alan Murray's Political Capital column. He wraps it up saying, in the end, Senator Specter probably will get his chairmanship, and he will repay his obligations not to the trial lawyers who funded his campaign, but to the senators who elected him chairman. In other words, he's gonna go along with the agenda, folks. Murray continues, he will support the president's judicial nominees regardless of their position on abortions. He will move quickly to limit class action lawsuits, complete an asbestos settlement, and possibly even curb medical malpractice suits. As a result, Murray summarizes, 2005 could become a watershed year for reining in the excesses of the U.S. tort system. So very happy they are that the big business, to quote Murray, big business, literally. The CEOs, the big, huge, we're not talking about small and medium-sized businesses. They really don't need or want tort reform. In fact, most small businesses don't want it because they would like to be able to sue large corporations also if, you know, when they're on the short end of the stick. And increasingly, our legal system, under the aegis of these so-called conservatives, is being tilted more and more to be friendly toward multinational corporations. And, of course, you know, we have essentially surrendered our sovereignty to multinational corporations by joining the World Trade Organization and signing the NAFTA agreement. Now they want to extend that with the Free Trade Area of the Americas and so on. Which leads, you know, appropriately to the second story. This is from the Seattle Times. In Seattle, they're a little more concerned about this than the rest of the country, but it's an interesting, you know, sign of things to come. I remember the last time I was in India. Must have been about 6 years ago. And the big headline story in the Indian Times, you know, one of the newspapers that nationwide newspapers in India. I believe it's published out of Bombay, but anyway, I remember reading on a train as I was traveling from Bombay to Hyderabad. The lead story was how Microsoft was down in. It might have been in Hyderabad, was hiring something like 10,000 people or something, you know, some huge hiring campaign by Microsoft. And that this was just this, you know, it was big news in India. This was years ago, this was almost a decade ago. Well, here in today's paper, or last Friday's actually, Seattle Times, Microsoft Chief Executive Steve Ballmer, an article by Briar Dudley, is breaking ground next week on a project that would double the size of its new facilities in Hyderabad, India, a move that could heighten concerns about U.S. corporations' increasing use of technology workers overseas. Now, see, again, these are the folks that elected George W. Bush. You know, now we know that the extra 2% that he got that pushed him over the top came from people making over 100,000, including those who are making over a million, obviously. At the same time, Dudley notes in his article, Microsoft, recently laid off technical workers in Redmond and slowed its rate of job creation in the U.S. Microsoft has also suspended work on a second local campus, this in Issaquah, Washington. And last month it gave up more than half the land it had reserved for that project. Why? Because they're moving to India. And why are they moving to India? Because labor is cheaper there. See, we used to have laws in the United States that protected domestic labor. I used to run an advertising agency in Atlanta, and we actually had to hire somebody who spoke both Japanese and Spanish. And you know, we ran all these ads. We finally found this guy. Shinji was his first name. He was Japanese. He was born in Peru and grew up in Peru, but his parents were Japanese. And to hire this guy, I had to go through 4 months of dealing with the INS in order to be able to hire him and getting the certain types of visas and all this stuff. And finally, we were able to hire him because we couldn't find an American who could do it. I mean, literally. Now businesses don't have to, and this was just 10 years ago, now businesses don't have to jump through those hoops anymore. They can just go to some other country and set up shop. Not a good thing, I think. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir!
Hi, I'm David Orrick. In vacuums, bagless is a dirty word. In fact, they're filthy. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. My newest hypoallergenic 8-pound Orrick XL uses triple-wall disposable filter bags. Try my new vacuum free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200. Orrick, the clean alternative to bagless vacuums.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Bush administration can't seem to get it right when it comes to creating jobs. In the U.S., there's a net loss of jobs. In Iraq, the Bush administration blames a clerical error for overstating the number of Iraqi jobs in projects funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. The agency first said more than 88,000 were working in its projects as of September 15th, but that has changed to just under 46,000 blamed on a clerical error.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
The polar caps are melting at a rapid pace.
Oh, is that Janice?
And rising ocean levels soon could harm the human race.
Oh, no, it must be Billionaires for Bush.
But they have got no proof their theories are correct. Our corporations don't get.
Cut those trees! Cut those trees!
Burn another little piece of Brazil that feels so good.
Cut it!
Cut another little piece of the forest down, baby. No need to worry, cause there's plenty more water.
Welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Alan in Amarillo, Texas on the line. Hey, Alan, what's on your mind today?
I hate to say it, but I think the worst lie that Bill Clinton said when was that he was against NAFTA, and then he wound up passing it.
I agree with you. I'm not sure that I never heard him say that he was against it. He worked very, very hard to get NAFTA passed. He had Congress was largely opposed to it. There was a fascinating article on the front page of the Wall Street Journal that I probably still have around here. I've held onto the thing for a decade, nearly. I mean, it was 96, I believe, where he was spending like all day long on the phone, you know, contacting all these, you know, wavering people and cutting deals, and talking about, I love this, you know, and the deal making and wheeling and dealing and stuff. He really worked hard to get that thing passed.
Yeah, I thought during the debates between him and the first Bush, I thought that he said that he was against it.
No, it was Ross Perot who was against it. Bush and Clinton were both in agreement that the international trade agreements would be a good thing. That's why Perot got 18% of the vote, because in spite of the fact that he seemed like a weird guy and his vice presidential candidate came out and said, who am I, what am I doing here, and his hearing aid wasn't working. And, Perot had everything going against him, and he still got a good chunk of the vote for a third-party candidate. I mean, huge. And it was because he was the only one of the three who was speaking against this kind of stuff. So
yeah, he'd make a better president than what we have now.
I suspect he would have, Alan. Absolutely, no doubt about it. Alan, thanks for the call. I do appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Let's go to Armin in Sarasota, Florida on the telephone. Hey, Armin, what's on your mind today?
Two things, quickly, in Catherine Harris's district down here.
Yeah. You live in it, don't you?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay. Didn't mean to rub it in, Armin.
Yeah, really. I had a heart attack a year ago. I'm still getting bills. Listen to this. The physician wants to charge me $129, you know, on my exit, you know, out, discharge out of the hospital. We called up today and says he wasn't even there. And the lady says, well, he might have signed the papers. And I'm sitting there thinking, wouldn't you like to get $130 every time you sign your name?
Yeah, that would be a pretty good deal. That would be a sweet deal.
And one quick thing here. You're an excellent writer and an author. Why don't you do a book that moves forward? This is the way it's looking. And call it Corporate Godsters, How the Huge Corporations in America Use Religion to Conceal Their Totalitarian Global State.
Yeah, well, you know, frankly, it's not the huge corporations, it's the Republican Party that's dancing to their tune and you know, using religion for partisan purposes. But, yeah, I get your point, and I agree with you.
You could do it. You are so good and talented.
Well, thank you, Armin. And I've, you know, I'm actually slowly working on a book about conservative and liberal economics.
Corporate Godsters.
There you go. Corporate Godsters. I think that's a good one. That's a good suggestion. Armin, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. You know, this is a very real and important issue that Armin raises, and that is that these guys have been so successful in causing people to ignore the fact that they're picking our pockets and systematically dismantling our democracy while causing us to focus on things like, you know, whether Janet Jackson's boob was shown on TV and, you know, whether that should be legislated or not. And, you know, the extent to which we should have prayer in schools or, you know, these what Newt likes to call wedge issues. People thinking that these are the real issues when, you know, there are life and death issues. You know, like, do you have a job? Can you pay for your health care? Life and death issues that are being ignored. It's just tragic. We'll get to more on that right after this.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Nurses in the Twin Cities were victims of economic warfare, according to the National Labor Relations Board. Upholding a 2002 ruling, the NLRB says that 23 nurses should be rewarded lost wages after they were refused employment while on strike against Fairview Health Services. The Minnesota Nurses Association brought the case in 2001 after it learned that the nurses were turned down for jobs at hospitals. The hospitals admitted refusing to hire the nurses, saying that because they negotiate the nurses' contracts jointly, they could legally apply economic pressure.
These students will not allow the mistreating of the workers, our friends, here at our university.
Recently, hundreds of students, workers, and union officials at the University of California, Santa Cruz presented a petition to the UC Bargaining Committee signed by 3,600 people in support of AFSCME workers seeking a fair contract. Refugio Marquez has been a custodian at UCSC for 8 years. He's had 2 back surgeries and is fighting cuts to worker wages and benefits.
I do hard work in here. Sometimes I have to do it for 2 people, and they don't care.
8,000 workers, ranging from bus drivers to food service employees on 9 campuses, have been working without a contract since June 30th. The Graduate Student Association, meanwhile, says it won't cross any future picket lines.
A national oil strike that would have crippled the world's 7th largest oil exporter has been temporarily averted. Nigeria's main labor union has decided to give that country's government a second chance after a promise to lower domestic fuel prices. Nigeria exports 2.5 million barrels of oil a day and is the 5th leading supplier of U.S. oil imports. In other news from Africa, cocoa workers on the Ivory Coast are concerned about their livelihood. The ports in the Ivory Coast ship 40% of the the world cocoa, and the threat of continued unrest and upheaval has worried traders during the market's main harvest season. Anti-French riots had recently closed the ports for 6 days.
In the past couple of years, a handful of companies have begun suing retired workers in order to cut their health care benefits. A 1998 federal court decision allowed GM to reduce retirement health care benefits for 50,000 salaried workers. GM had promised them health care in retirement in order to get them to accept early retirement. Union retirees are better protected by their contracts, but now even union retirees are being sued. The UAW and the steelworkers have gone to court to defend the retirees against this latest tactic by companies out to improve their bottom lines by cutting worker benefits.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. More than 40 new companies and nearly 9,000 jobs have been added to the TechsUnite Offshore Tracker website. According to the list, more than 300 companies with tech industry jobs in the United States are now offshoring. Reuters, Synopsys, Cadence, and Magma Design Automation have all joined the list of companies that offshore. The list of IT jobs being outsourced include intellectual property legal positions, data engineers, and designers.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We're gonna do something here that I, to the best of my knowledge, has never been done before on radio, and we'll see if it works. We're gonna try it for a couple of weeks. In this this segment, there's a 17-minute segment here in the second hour of our Tuesday program, and we're just gonna try this out. I'm gonna do an on-air online training, as it were, about neurolinguistic programming. Neurolinguistic programming has been described by some, Placidus Roy in our chat room, in fact, just a few minutes ago said very well, the conscious use of language to produce unconscious change. And but there are so many, you know, dimensions to it and pieces to it. It's really interesting. There are a series of assumptions of NLP, and there are 16 main ones. They're different lists from different people, but the two that I want to talk about first today. And I'm not going to take calls during this. We're just going to do this. The first is respect for other people's model of their world. In other words, understanding that everybody actually experiences the world differently. Just you know, one of the main mistakes that we make in life is thinking that everybody thinks the way we do and everybody experiences the world we do. Ain't true. And number two, that all behavior has a positive intent. Dale Carnegie in his How to Win Friends and Influence People talks about how Two-Gun Crowley, you know, this notorious criminal back in the 30s, and as he was lay dying, this guy, a bank robber, famous bank robber, and a mobster, he says, all I ever wanted to do was help people. Every behavior has a positive intent behind it, no matter how functional or dysfunctional it may be or may not be. So the first thing that I wanted to talk about is rapport. Rapport is stepping into another person's world or allowing them to step into yours. You know, again, based on this idea that everybody models the world differently. Everybody understands the world differently. Here's an example of really very powerful rapport, the establishment of it. The Milton Erickson was one of the guys that was modeled when they developed NLP. NLP was developed by Richard Bandler and John Grinder. Neurolinguistic programming is what it stands for. They modeled it after the work of Fritz Perls, the Gestalt therapy. Milton Erickson, the famous hypnotist, he was a psychiatrist and medical hypnotist, and Virginia Satir, the child and family therapist. And there's a story about how Milton Erickson had been slammed by the president of one of the psychiatric, I believe it was the American Psychiatric Association. And he came to the annual meeting. He had been slammed in an op-ed piece. So he comes to the annual meeting, and Erickson was an old man at this point, and he was in a wheelchair. This was in the late 50s. And He had had polio as a young as a child, and so he spent much of his life actually in a wheelchair. And he wheels his chair up to the front door of the APA meeting, and here's the president standing there shaking people's hands as they go in. And Erickson reaches up and shakes his hand, and as he does so, he places his index finger on the guy's wrist so he can get his pulse. He's noticing how the guy is breathing. He's noticing his eye blinks. And as he's shaking this man's hand and pacing his words to go along with this man's physiology at the most subtle levels, following his breathing, his eye blinking, all these physiological cues, he's putting him into a trance by pacing his words like this. And he essentially says, you know, do you notice that you're feeling very relaxed? And the guy says, yes. You know, this guy had written this editorial saying medical hypnosis was nonsense. And he says, you know, you're in a light hypnotic trance right now. And the guy goes, oh, that's very interesting. He says, and you can see how this would be therapeutic. And the guy goes, yeah, you're right. You know, this is very relaxing. And he says, maybe I wonder if you would like to share that with everybody here at the meeting, how good you would feel if you did that. And the guy walks up to the front of the room and says, you know, I'd like to share with all my friends, you know, an apology to Milton Erickson. And suddenly kind of wakes up. It's just this oh, my God, moment, you know. That's called the handshake induction, and it's become part of the lore around Milton Erickson. I was in when I was trained by Richard Bandler a couple of years ago, a decade ago in England for my NLP trainer training. There were, I don't know, 150 people in the room or so. There were seven of us who actually ended up getting the licenses out of this experience. And there was this guy in the front row. I was about 5-6 rows back. There was this guy in the front row who, on the very first hour, the very first day of this, what was, you know, 10-12 hours a day of, as I recall it, a 14-day program, kept finishing Bandler's sentences for him. And Richard was sitting up on the stage, and he was about 20 or 30 feet away from this guy, sitting on this bar stool. And this guy kept finishing his sentences for him, because Bandler would occasionally pause to think. And the first couple of times, Bandler just kind of shot him a dirty look. And by the third or fourth time that this guy did this, Bandler gets up off his chair and starts very slowly walking toward him. And I noticed there was this peculiar jerkiness to the way that Richard was moving. And he was saying, and he was pacing his words in a particular way. And it all of a sudden hit me. He is tracking this guy's physiology. He's tracking his breathing, his eye blinks, his body motions, and he's pacing his words to this and creating such powerful rapport that he's basically entering this guy's world. And as he's doing it, Richard, as he's walking across the stage towards this guy, he's saying, you know, it's not very polite to erupt like that. I'm not sure that I would just, you know, burst out like that. It seems kind of rash behavior, don't you think? And this guy, and while Richard is saying this, he's scratching the tops of his own arms with his fingers. And this guy sitting in his chair, and we're all like, you know, horrified watching this happen, is the guy in the chair starts scratching his own arms. You notice when people are in rapport, they imitate each other's body language. And Bandler continues with his, as he's walking toward the end of the stage, continues his talking about, this is fairly rash behavior, these eruptions like this. And within, it couldn't have been more than 2.5 minutes. By the time Richard reached the edge of the stage, this guy was on the floor writhing, scratching himself hysterically, thinking that he was, you know, breaking out with a rash. And then Richard, you know, snaps him out of this thing, tells him he's going to sit quietly for the rest of the session. He's going to learn more than he ever learned in his life, and he's going to have a great time. And the guy did. Now, those are extreme examples of the power of establishing rapport. But by the time I finish this in about 9 minutes, I'm going to tell you how George W. Bush did essentially the exact same thing in this last election. And here's how he did it. First of all, you have to understand that in order to establish rapport, that you're operating at the level below the cortex, below the thinking brain. You're operating at the level of the limbic brain and the reptilian brain, the mammalian brain, the brain that we share with all mammals, and the brain that we share with reptiles, the lower function of the brain. This is where we process emotions and feelings. It's not where we process intellectual stuff. Now, there are three primary ways that people share information with each other. that they represent the world. And also these three primary ways that people primarily experience the world. And these are visual, auditory, and kinesthetic, or feeling. And people who are primarily visual mostly see the world. Their experience of the world is seeing it. And their language reflects that. They will say things like, yeah, I see what you're talking about. Well, how can you see what somebody's talking about? Do you imagine their words as type running across the screen? No, but they somehow do. They actually do. They see. They say, well, yeah, that's very clear to me. Yes, I see your point. Hey, it's great to see you. I'll see you later. In fact, you know, they'll say on the telephone, you know, things like, you know, I'll see you later. And well, wait a minute, we were talking, weren't we? And in our culture, about 70% more or less of people live primarily in a visual world. And the way that you can spot this, if you're visual, or you can hear it if you're auditory, you can get a sense of it if you're kinesthetic, the way that you can notice this is by listening carefully to how they speak. Visual people will use mostly visual metaphor, like I just said. You know, yes, I see what you're talking about. They also tend to stand up straighter than auditory or kinesthetic people. They also tend to be more concerned about how things look, very often their own appearance as well. And when you're watching somebody's eyes while they're speaking, you'll find that visual people, because they store a lot of information in visual memory, tend to be looking up a lot. They're looking up at where they stashed memories. Okay. So that's visual folks. Auditory folks make up maybe 10 or 15% of our population. Auditory folks are more likely to be listening to the radio than watching television, for example. Auditory people live in a sea of sound. It's their primary way of experiencing the world. Now, all of us have all of these things, by the way. And all of us are capable of all these things. But most people have one primary one that they just kind of hang out in. Auditory people say things like, I hear what you're saying. That sounds good to me. I like the sound of that. Hey, it's great hearing your voice again. I'll talk to you later. And when you hear language from somebody that is using primarily auditory metaphor, auditory predicates, you know that you're speaking to somebody who has the auditory, the hearing sense as their primary way of sensing, interpreting, and understanding, filtering the world. Now, the third type of person are kinesthetics, people who are primarily live in their feelings, hang out in their feelings, understand the world through their feelings. Kinesthetics will say people, and this is maybe 5%. It's a relatively small percentage, maybe 5 or 10% of our population in you know modern civilization. And kinesthetics will say things like, "Yeah, I can get my hands around that. That's a good solid idea. I like the feel of that. You know, I have a good sense for this. Hey, it's great to be in touch. Stay in touch. I'll catch you later." And they say things like that, and. And it's their way of expressing their experience of the world. Now, what's interesting about this is that, first of all, if you want to establish... Actually, there's a couple things interesting about this. The first is if you want to establish rapport with somebody, if you want to step into their world, use the kind of predicates that they use. Start listening to how people speak and feeding back to them their language, even if it's not your language. And you'll discover suddenly that you're communicating with them in ways you weren't before. I'll give you an example from my family. I don't think my kids will mind this, and it's an interesting story. It's you know kind of one of these non-judgmental things. My wife is very visual. I'm very auditory. We have three kids. The oldest is primarily visual. The middle one is very kinesthetic. And the youngest is pretty auditory. It's really an interesting family. And we were sitting around two Christmases ago. And we were going to go to a movie, and we were trying to decide which movie to go to. And Louise, who's very visual, says, "Well, let's see which movie we should go see." Right? Of course, let's see. Right? Here's the visual content. And the visual daughter says, "Well, you know, I'd like to go see that one." And she points to a particular movie in the newspaper. We had the paper out on the table. And we had this conversation, and the kinesthetic kid. I'm not going to identify them. The kinesthetic kid, the question was asked, which movie do you want to go to? And he was like, well, I'm not really sure. And the visual one says, which one looks best to you? And he goes, I don't know. And the auditory one goes, well, which one do you think would be a better story or, more entertaining? I don't know. And all of a sudden I realized what was going on. And so I said to him, which one feels right to you? And he says, well, that one. And he pointed to one of the movies. So, once I asked him in his world model, he knew. I mean, he knew what he felt. But he couldn't explain it in a visual sense or an auditory sense. This is a very common thing. In fact, this is one of the reasons why kids who are highly kinesthetic have, in many cases, have difficulties in public schools, because our teaching systems are primarily auditory and visual. And kinesthetic people generally have to do things in order to learn them. Now, here's the where we take it a step beyond this. First of all, here's your homework for the next week. And in fact, you can call into the show and let us know how it works out. I want you to listen to how people speak and get a sense of whether they're auditory, visual, or kinesthetic, and start using those metaphors when you speak back to them. If somebody says, this looks great to me, and your tendency would be to say, yeah, I have a good sense about that, a good feeling. Try saying, yeah, it looks good to me too. And, try using their predicates. Now, here's the thing, though, that's most important. People generally make decisions based on feelings. Even they organize their logic to agree with their feelings more often than they organize their feelings to agree with their logic. And this is what the Bush campaign did brilliantly. They came up with a campaign that had slogans that were essentially kinesthetic, that had to do with feelings. Strong, stand up straight, move forward. Don't cut and run. I mean, the vast majority of their metaphors, absolutely consistent, steady. And then, in using auditory and visual metaphor, they were all over the map as to policy. Kerry never really, in my opinion, captured a good kinesthetic sense. And so what happened was people would hear Bush over and over again talking kinesthetically, and they would get a feeling for him out of his kinesthesia, because Bush is actually a very kinesthetic guy. That's why he didn't do well in school, I think, in some part. And so he could pretty much say anything he wanted about policy, and it didn't matter because they had a feeling, because the one consistent message in the campaign had been kinesthetic. So in a political campaign, the first and most important thing to do is to identify the primary feeling, what's called in psychology the state, or in NLP the state. What is the state you want to convey to people? What's the feeling you want to convey? And then you craft all your messages around that. And so I would suggest, for example, progressives, one of our primary states should be compassion or understanding. There's a lot we can do with this. 10 minutes before the hour.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
The last hours of ancient sunlight, the fate of the world, and what we can do before it's too late is Tom Hartman's stunning wake-up call to humanity. Conversations with God author Neil Donald Walsh says this about the book.
Quote it everywhere. Buy 10 books and give them away. Don't let this action go unheard. You may feel like a voice in the wilderness, but it is your voice we're waiting to hear. Yours is the crucial vote. You are the determining factor. We reach critical mass when we reach you, and you choose to reach others with the simple message of this book. Let us act at last in the best interest of all. Then the sun will shine another day, and another still, and life will not merely go on, but achieve its highest expression, its grandest glory, its greatest joy. Can we give this gift to our children? Please say yes.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots, organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a WIN feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. In the presidential elections, nearly 90% of African Americans cast their vote for Senator John Kerry. But with President Bush back in the White House, African Americans are looking to the local level to push for change. WIN reporter Leanne Caldwell has more.
Both presidential campaigns focused on the war in Iraq, terrorism, and keeping America safe. Many in the black community adamantly oppose the occupation of Iraq. They say it's a war based on lies and profiteering. African-American opposition to the war is also strong because it disproportionately affects minorities, as most enlistees are low-income people of color.
A Republican Party who diametrically opposes everything New York families are all about.
New York City Councilmember Charles Barron, whose motto is that all politics are local, stresses that unemployment is rising, the Section 8 housing program is shrinking, and school funding continues to go unfulfilled. 50% of black males are unemployed in New York City. Councilmember Barron says that the policy of shrinking government shrinks employment, as 60% of black and Latino work in the public sector.
You got to listen to these cold words, that we're going to shrink government. We're going to make sure that we privatize more of the public sector, even things like the faith-based initiatives that is taken away from social institutions that the government provided and given it to these private religious groups.
A major program that President Bush will push in his next 4 years is the privatization of Social Security. This would have a doubly negative impact on the black communities who aren't large contributors to the stock market. And with unemployment rates so high, many don't have money to set aside for 30 years down the road. Leaders in the black community say they'll continue voter registration drives and push to get more people of color elected to public office in the next 4 years. For WIN, I'm Leanne Caldwell.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
We were born before the wind, also younger than the sun.
And welcome back.
Yeah, the bonnie boat was won as we sail into the mystic.
There's a marvelous kinesthetic song for you, right? Full of kinesthetic metaphor.
Oh, I can now hear the sailors cry.
Oh, now there's the auditory part.
Smell the sea and feel the sky.
And we're back to kinesthetic.
Let your soul and spirit fly into the mystic.
Yeah, remarkable. Van Morrison, a brilliant songwriter. And that's one of the interesting things about if you're going to communicate with a group, just to wrap this stuff up, if you're going to communicate with a group of people, with more than one person, you can't obviously establish rapport and track a group of people as easily as you can one person at a time. So what you want to do is try to craft your message in a way that it touches all three of these sensory modalities so that you're talking in a way that those people who primarily see the world see what you're saying. You know, they're clear about what you're trying to communicate. and that the people who hear the world get it, and the people who feel the world also get a solid sense of it. The people who hear the world hear it, right? And one of the most powerful ways to do this is with story. Story is the most powerful teaching tool there is, bar none. And this is, you know, just to wrap this thing up. And what's interesting is that story at its surface isn't really where the power is. When you go to a movie, it's not the main arc of the movie where you suddenly shake yourself and go, oh, my God, I'm in a movie. I totally forgot. It's not the main arc of a novel where you get so lost in it that you're turning pages, you know, so fast, or you're crying or laughing out loud or whatever. It's when you go two or three levels deep into the story, when you interrupt the main arc of the story and start a subplot. And then the subplot gets interrupted, and you get into another subplot, you know. And when you go two or three levels deep, then basically the person, you or I, then basically we are in a trance. It's a learning kind of trance, but it's a trance. And that's where you embed the information. So it's so important when crafting a message, whatever that message be, that you build it around a story, or you build a story around it, that you use metaphor for it. You know, unfortunately, the dark side of the force is people using stories that are just made up. For example, the campaign to end the estate tax. Frank Luntz, NLP genius, said, well, let's call this the death tax, number one. And number two, let's say that people are losing small farms. Actually, a number of people have looked for this. There's a great book about this by Bill Gates Sr. They can't find anybody who's lost a small farm as a result, a family farm, as a result of the estate tax. Nobody. It just doesn't happen. But it's the story that gets promoted, and that's what people remember. So build story.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Nurses in the Twin Cities were victims of economic warfare, according to the National Labor Relations Board. Upholding a 2002 ruling, the NLRB says that 23 nurses should be rewarded lost wages after they were refused employment while on strike against Fairview Health Services. The Minnesota Nurses Association brought the case in 2001 after it learned that the nurses were turned down for jobs at hospitals. The hospitals admitted refusing to hire the nurses, saying that because they negotiate the nurses' contracts jointly, they could legally apply economic pressure.
These students will not allow the mistreating of their workers, our friends, here at our university.
Recently, hundreds of students, workers, and union officials at the University of California, Santa Cruz, presented a petition to the UC Bargaining Committee, signed by 3,600 people in support of AFSCME workers seeking a fair contract. Refugio Marquez has been a custodian at UCSC for 8 years. He's had 2 back surgeries and is fighting cuts to worker wages and benefits.
I do hard work in here. Sometimes I have to do it for 2 people, and they don't care.
8,000 workers, ranging from bus drivers to food service employees on 9 campuses, have been working without a contract.
contract since June 30th. The Graduate Student Association, meanwhile, says it won't cross any future picket lines.
A national oil strike that would have crippled the world's seventh largest oil exporter has been temporarily averted. Nigeria's main labor union has decided to give that country's government a second chance after a promise to lower domestic fuel prices. Nigeria exports 2.5 million barrels of oil a day and is the fifth leading supplier of U.S. oil imports. In other news from Africa, cocoa workers on the Ivory Coast are concerned about their livelihood. The ports in the Ivory Coast ship 40% of the world's cocoa, and the threat of continued unrest and upheaval has worried traders during the market's main harvest season. Anti-French riots had recently closed the ports for 6 days.
In the past couple of years, a handful of companies have begun suing retired workers in order to cut their health care benefits. A 1998 federal court decision allowed GM to reduce retirement health care benefits for 50,000 salaried workers. GM had promised them health care in retirement in order to get them to accept early retirement. Union retirees are better protected by their contracts, but now even union retirees are being sued. The UAW and the steelworkers have gone to court to defend the retirees against this latest tactic by companies out to improve their bottom lines by cutting worker benefits.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. More than 40 new companies and nearly 9,000 jobs have been added to the TechsUnite offshore tracker website. According to the list, more than 300 companies with tech industry jobs in the United States are now offshoring. Reuters, Synopsys, Cadence, and Magma Design Automation have all joined the list of companies that offshore. The list of IT jobs being outsourced include intellectual property legal positions, data engineers, and designers.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
The wails of despair from progressive friends began pouring through my telephone very early on November 3rd. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? We'll have to move to Canada. I can't take another 4 years. It's so much to bear. I give up. Get a grip. Yes, the Bushites are back, and yes, it's going to be a miserable 4 years of grueling battles as they push their agenda of more war, more right-wing appointments to the courts, more giveaways to corporate power, more pollution, more cuts in public services, more assaults on Social Security, more secrecy, more shredding of our liberties, more, well, more Bush. But give up? Give up the fight for our essential American values, the values of fairness, justice, and opportunity for all? Surrender our nation's historic possibilities to these ideological zealots and corporate frontmen? Not a chance. What are we going to do? Fight back, that's what. First, recognize that we're fighting from strength and are tantalizingly close to winning. 49% of voters not only were with us in this election, but strongly with us, including more than 60% of young voters. Our grassroots organizing this time was stupendous, giving us new expertise, tools, and outreach to keep advancing. And you can count on the Bushites to give this year's non-voters and wary Bush voters more and more reasons to get active with us. Second, recognize that fighting for democracy is always a long-haul proposition. It took decades for America's founders to build enough public support to break with England. Likewise, the abolitionists, suffragists, populists, labor, civil rights, and other movements didn't achieve their historic successes on their first outing, and it'll require the same perseverance on our part. This is Jim Hightower saying, we've just begun to lift our country up. As Willie Nelson says, the early bird might get the worm, but it's the second mouse that gets the cheese.
The holiday taste of Sam's Club is here. Save time and money by shopping for all of your holiday business and home entertaining needs in one convenient stop. Visit the club this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, to sample a variety of delicious food perfect for any occasion. While you're there, you can pick up gifts for your employees, family, and friends. During this busy holiday season, don't miss your chance to shop, sample, and save on all of your business and home entertaining needs at the holiday taste of Sam's Club this weekend. Sam's Club, we're in business for small business.
Federal. Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. The third hour of our program. We just finished our online, on-air, neuro-linguistic programming and progressive activism class. And a couple of questions were raised in the chat room that I thought I'd just very quickly answer. How do you prevent this kind of stuff from affecting you? And the easiest way, of course, is to notice it. If you are aware that somebody is trying to influence you and you are aware of the tools that they are using to try to influence you, then you can use cognitive processes, you can use thinking, you can use that realization to basically short-circuit it. In fact, this is the strategy that so many parents have learned to effectively use with their kids with regard to advertising on television. And the kids are sitting there watching TV with their parents, and an ad comes on that basically says to a kid that they won't be cool if they don't wear a certain kind of tennis shoes or whatever, you know, or the you've got to have the white teeth or whatever it may be in order to be popular. And the parent simply points out, oh, that's interesting. They're trying to make people believe that they are less than complete if they don't have this, or that they won't fit in if they don't have that, or what, and just, you know, make clear what the subtle message of the ad is, and it immunizes the children against the advertising. So just, you know, an example. So, but I don't want to belabor that. We're going to keep this as our Tuesday afternoon segment here for a couple of weeks. We'll see how it works out, what kind of feedback we get, how, you know, what you think of it, and please, you know, let me know. Hopefully somebody presumably will start a thread over on our message board and you know, let us know a discussion about it, and we'll see where we go with it. I think it's going to be a useful and fun thing. I'm having fun with this. I hope you are. Anyhow, back to the news. U.S. Airways today, this is in the Washington Post. Actually, it was in Friday's Washington Post, but it's, you know, it's this ongoing story. There's a story from today's Wall Street Journal that segues out of it that I want to get to, but I wanted to set it up with this thing from last Friday. And that is that U.S. Airways on Friday asked a bankruptcy judge to cancel labor contracts with three of its unions. They went into court and they said, yes, we negotiated in good faith with these employees. And yes, we promised them that when they retired, they would get pensions and health care benefits. But we don't want to pay that anymore. We're having a hard time, you know, it's having a hard time making money here. And rather than cutting back on our CEO salaries or our senior executive salaries or perks, rather than cutting back on, you know, rather than changing our business model, we'd rather just not have to pay our employees anymore what we promised them. And this is a growing trend across America. I mean, this is just exploding. This is the hot new thing in corporate America, is stick it to the people with the pensions. And in fact, this is the AP, the Associated Press story by Matthew Barakat, I guess is probably how it's pronounced. It was published in the Washington Post. U.S. Airways asked a bankruptcy judge Friday to cancel labor contracts with three of its unions and impose much lower pay so it can move ahead with a plan to permanently cut costs, reposition itself as a low-cost carrier, and avoid a possible liquidation. The 120-page court filing also asked the judge to eliminate retiree health benefits and cancel its two remaining pension plans, which provide benefits to its machinists and flight attendants. In other words, the retired folks who thought that they had, you know, played hard, played the game by the rules, put in their 10, 20, 30, 40 years, whatever it was, played by the rules, did what was asked of them, in many cases took lower pay in exchange for the promise of a pension. The airline is saying, let's just throw those guys overboard, those men and women. The judge in this case, a fellow by the name of Stephen Mitchell, has already allowed the airline, notes this AP article, has already allowed the airline to impose 21% pay cuts on workers represented by the machinists and flight attendants unions and the CWA, that's the Communication Workers of America, who also work for the airline. I'm assuming that they must be, yeah, passenger service employees, the people who answer the phone when you call up to make a reservation. In particular, the airline said it needs relief from the costs associated with its pension plans for machinists and flight attendants. The pilot's pension plan, by the way, was terminated in the company's first bankruptcy reorganization. Now, what happens to people who have pensions that the corporations sue them, or the corporations go into bankruptcy, you know, in phony baloney bankruptcy? They're continuing to do business, and really, they're continuing to pay all their bills except to their employees. What happens to these people? Well, interestingly, most of these corporations, and I don't know if this is the case with U.S. Air, so I can't draw an absolute correlation here, most of these corporations that have pension plans are members of, participate with, the what's called the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, or Guarantee Corporation. And the PBGC, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corp, is actually one of a handful, very small number of corporations that are not started at a state level by private individuals, but instead was created at the federal level by an act of Congress. And so it's a federally chartered corporation. There's very few of these. Amtrak is another one. I believe the Corporation for Public Broadcasting is one. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I'm right on that. There's just a handful of them. Fannie Mae used to be one. They've gone private now. But because usually corporations are only created at the state level, you know, by private individual people. But this is a federally chartered company, and the way it works is if you have a pension program, you pay 1% of the money that you're putting into your pension plan to this insurance company, basically. This is the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. And out of that 1%, you know, the assumption is that 99.1% of pensions don't go broke, not numerically, but dollar-wise, of all pension dollars, are not involved in pensions going down, going broke, then if an individual corporation stops paying its pension for whatever reason, fraud, bankruptcy, they go out of business, whatever, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation can continue to pay the pension. In other words, it's sort of like the FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. If your bank goes out of business, you're up to $100,000 of your deposits with the bank are covered if your bank is a member of the FDIC. And FDIC members of banks pay into the FDIC. Well, it's the same thing with the pension thing. And so all these pensions for all these years, pension plans, big corporations, have been paying this 1% into the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. And every now and then when somebody, you know, when some corporation just, you know, completely bites the dust, the feds step in and continue to pay the pensions to the employees so they don't notice any loss. I mean, you know, the company went out of business, but the insurance company, basically, is like an insurance company, picks up the slack. Well, that was all pre-conservative economics, pre-Reagan, pre-Ronald Reagan declaring his war on organized labor. Keep in mind, when Ronald Reagan came into office, 25% of all Americans had a union job, which meant that more than half of all Americans, because for every union job, there's another parallel non-union job of equal pay and benefits. It's simply the reality, because union jobs set the floor for labor, you know. And so, you know, when Reagan came into office, about half of all Americans could actually raise a family, put their kids through school, have all their medical expenses covered, and even have a pension, have a retirement on a single wage earner's salary. This is what made the middle class in America. The high point of this was 1947. 35% of all American workers were unionized. 70% of all American workers were able to raise a family on a single person's salary. And then, of course, 1947, and this all started back at just 12 years earlier, 1935, with the passage of the Wagner Act, which legalized essentially unions. Prior to that, I mean, literally, people trying to organize were being killed. And there were all these, great strikes and things through the late 1800s and the early 1900s that led to the Wagner Act. So the peak of unionization was 1947, and the reason it started to decline was because of a law passed called the Taft-Hartley Act, which allowed states to opt out of the Wagner Act in part and become so-called right-to-work states. This is another great euphemism. In other words, the employer has the right to say, no, you can't join a union, or we ain't going to have a union here, thank you very much. It set the bar in different ways. So anyhow, the unionization slowly declined from 47 to the 1980s when Reagan, came into power, but from 35% down to 25%. So we went from 70% of the American workforce down to about half of the American workforce being solidly in the middle class and able to raise a family. And now we're down to about 7% of the non-governmental workforce, the private workforce, being unionized, about 11 or 12%, maybe 13% of the total workforce of the United States unionized, as a result of more or less 20 years of warfare on organized labor. Bill Clinton slowed it down to his credit, and his policies were fairly labor-friendly, but was not able to reverse, certainly, the Sherman Antitrust Act or the many other little add-ons since then, or the damage that Ronald Reagan did. So we have this corporation that guarantees people's pensions, and now it is in danger. And this could be a disaster. I mean, when this thing goes down, and it looks like it may, when this thing goes down, it's going to take a lot of people with it. It's not going to take any big corporations with it, so it's not going to be probably a big headline story in the corporate media that talks about business news and not labor news. But a lot of people are going to suffer. As the Wall Street Journal notes today in this article, pension guarantors' deficit widens. The Pension Guarantee Benefit Guarantee Corp said its long-term deficit expanded to about $23 billion in fiscal 2004 from $11.2 billion in 2003. In other words, it's the amount of debt that it has just doubled. Douglas Elliott, president of the Center on Federal Financial Institutions, a bipartisan Washington think tank, says the PBGC is thoroughly bankrupt no matter how you look at it. I think the government probably is going to have to sponsor a bailout at some point. This is what he says. He estimates that the PBGC, quoting from the Wall Street Journal here today, eventually could hit a deficit of $100 billion and run out of cash altogether around 2020. That would precipitate a major crisis, he says. And the reason why, of course, the insurance company would then, if they owed you a dollar, they'd no longer be paying you a dollar. They'd be paying you whatever they had. You might get 20 cents on the dollar. You might get 10 cents on the dollar. You might get 3 cents on the dollar. And so this is, in my opinion, this should be a major issue. This should be front page news in America. It's covered on page 2 of today's Wall Street Journal. Of yesterday's Wall Street Journal, but it's just not being talked about in the press, in the media, and it concerns me that it's not. This is an important issue that's going to affect the lives of literally tens of millions of Americans, and has the potential to affect the lives of hundreds of millions of Americans. All of us, because we're all in this economy together. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service.
Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bet.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Econonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Econonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. All of the attention given to Halliburton and their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Listening to you, I get the music. Gazing at you, I get the heat. Following you, I climb the mountain.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Interesting. Conversations in our chat room. If you haven't checked this thing out, it's just a great community of people. Go to TomHartman.com and click on live chat, and it'll get you in there. If you want to call into the program, our number is 1-866. It's one of these newfangled toll-free numbers, 1-866. Toll-free all across the United States, and I believe Canada as well. I could be wrong. I know we have some Canadian listeners. One of them is in our chat room right now, in fact, offering advice on how to emigrate. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. The World Health Organization is getting concerned about what's going on, not just in the United States, but in around the world, in countries that are buying our exports. Here we have this very strange situation where there is a diabetes epidemic underway all around the world, and it's the, in my opinion, it's the result of the use of corn syrup. And you've probably heard this rant before, but corn syrup is metabolized in the body in a wholly different way than all other kinds of sugar. And you track the rise of corn syrup, which is has been exploding over the last 20 years, in large part because of government subsidies to huge mega farming corporations. You track the use of corn syrup, and it pretty much correlates with the rise of obesity. And I know that for Louise and I, when we just, a couple of years ago, just stripped all products containing corn syrup out of our diet, that there was a noticeable change in our health and our waistline. So I pass that along. Anyhow, the World Health Organization is worried about this. 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number. Taxi driver number 12 in Santa Fe on the line. Hey, number 12, how you doing?
I'm kind of upset today, but regarding high fructose corn syrup, yeah, that stuff basically shuts down the metabolism of everything else in your body for the purpose of metabolizing it. And I can see why it would lead to diabetes. It's one of the worst things in the world.
Yeah.
And sugar, it's basically in every, you have to buy the little small company sodas like Whole Foods or Santa Fe Sky or whatever it is.
That's
these,
right.
Actually, you still use cane sugar.
Yeah, and pay a premium for it, And it's amazing because it's literally billions of our tax dollars are what are making corn sugar, so corn syrup, so cheap. And that was what the whole, Coke, New Coke thing was about. They wanted to get rid of cane sugar, and so they did this formula change, and, they never went back. It's
real quick.
Yes, sir.
I'm really upset because I'm not going to be able to hear you anymore.
Yeah, well, I'm number 12. I'm going to put you on hold, and you can talk to Ira about that. It's not something I'm going to talk about on the air. We don't, talk about what's going on with our affiliates or not. 17 million of these people in the developing world. Are they using cane syrup? I think so. I think that corn syrup. I think I have seen it. It's interesting, when I travel in Europe, if you buy European products, more often than not, it's cane sugar. It's just regular sugar. But when you buy products that are manufactured in the United States, and they, U.S. candy companies are very aggressive exporters, and their products are showing up all over the world now with lots and lots of corn syrup in them. And I've been saying this for years, and I continue to say it. I think that this is the problem. And I think that the reason that it's not being covered by the mainstream media is, again, that you've got all these interlocking boards of directors with these very large corporations, which include our media. And I know this sounds like conspiracy nut stuff, but it's – and maybe it is. Maybe it is. But I really think not. There is good science on this, there is a, the corn syrup causes obesity and diabetes, or may contribute to it. I mean, there has been some very tantalizing science, and it's just not much discussed. People talk about obesity all the time, and they, it's McDonald's, and I thought it was interesting, the Super Size Me movie, where this guy gained all that weight and had all these health problems, he was drinking the McDonald's drinks. The young woman from the Competitive Enterprise Institute, who did the same thing and tried to make a movie debunking that McDonald's was bad for you, didn't drink the sweetened drinks. She drank the diet drinks, and she didn't have the health problems that the other guy did. It's not certainly a scientific study, but it raises my eyebrows. So anyhow, the World Health Organization, all upset about diabetes exploding. Something to be concerned about here, too. 29 minutes past the hour.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. In vacuums, bagless is a dirty word. In fact, they're filthy. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. My newest hypoallergenic 8-pound Orrick XL uses triple-wall disposable filter bags. Try my new vacuum free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200. Orrick, the clean alternative to bagless vacuums.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Nurses in the Twin Cities were victims of economic warfare, according to the National Labor Relations Board. Upholding a 2002 ruling, the NLRB says that 23 nurses should be rewarded lost wages after they were refused employment while on strike against Fairview Health Services.
The Minnesota Nurses Association brought the case in 2001 after it learned that the nurses were turned down for jobs at hospitals. The hospitals admitted refusing to hire the nurses, saying that because they negotiate the nurses' contracts jointly, they could legally apply economic pressure.
We students will not allow the mistreating of the workers, our friends, here at our university.
Recently, hundreds of students, workers, and union officials at the University of California, Santa Cruz, presented a petition to the UC Bargaining Committee, signed by 3,600 people in support of AFSCME workers seeking a fair contract. Refugio Marquez has been a custodian at UCSC for 8 years. He's had 2 back surgeries and is fighting cuts to worker wages and benefits.
I do hard work in here. Sometimes I have to do it for 2 people, and they don't care.
8,000 workers, ranging from bus drivers to food service employees on 9 campuses, have been working without a contract since June 30th. The Graduate Student Association, meanwhile, says it won't cross any future picket lines.
A national oil strike that would have crippled the world's 7th largest oil exporter has been temporarily averted. Nigeria's main labor union has decided to give that country's government a second chance after a promise to lower domestic fuel prices. Nigeria exports 2.5 million barrels of oil a day and is the 5th leading supplier of U.S. oil imports. In other news from Africa, cocoa workers on the Ivory Coast are concerned about their livelihood. The ports in the Ivory Coast ship 40% of the world's cocoa, and the threat of continued unrest and upheaval has worried traders during the market's main harvest season. Anti-French riots had recently closed the ports for 6 days.
In the past couple of years, a handful of companies have begun suing retired workers in order to cut their health care benefits. A 1998 federal court decision allowed GM to reduce retirement health care benefits for 50,000 salaried workers. GM had promised them health care in retirement in order to get them to accept early retirement. Union retirees are better protected by their contracts, but now even union retirees are being sued. The UAW and the steelworkers have gone to court to defend the retirees against this latest tactic by companies out to improve their bottom lines by cutting worker benefits.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. More than 40 new companies and nearly 9,000 jobs have been added to the TechsUnite offshore tracker website. According to the list, more than 300 companies with tech industry jobs in the United States are now offshoring. Reuters, Synopsys, Cadence, and Magma Design Automation have all joined the list of companies that offshore. The list of IT jobs being outsourced include intellectual property legal positions, data engineers, and designers.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
It ain't no use to sit and wonder why they... It don't matter anyhow. And it ain't no use to sit and wonder why, babe.
No, it's better to figure out why. You know, it's you can do things about things when you figure out why. Speaking of figuring out why is it that our schools seem to be improving? The advocates of the No Child Left Behind Act, which those of you who are regular listeners to this program know, I think is nuts. And I say that as someone who has written 8 books on attention deficit disorder. I'm the president of the board of directors of a private school. I've done in-service trainings for school districts from California to London over a 10-year period. Ran a program for abused kids for 5 years. I was the executive director of it. Rostered as a psychotherapist, blah, blah, blah. I can give you all my credentials. Anyhow, it was pretty clear to me when this thing was coming down, this No Child Left Behind Act, that what it was another corporate handout. That it was, and in fact, I talked to Jim Jeffords about this, or his office, and this is why he left the Republican Party, was over this. And he commissioned a study, and they found that, sure enough, the main effect of the No Child Left Behind Act was to take one fairly large private testing corporation, and they come up with these tests that cost about 5 cents worth of paper, and they sell them for $1 or $5 or whatever to schools, to take a testing corporation's annual revenues from $400 million to over $1 billion a year instantly. And, of course, several of these corporations, actually, and some of them were very, very, very well politically connected. So now we find this fall, North Carolina announced that 660 of its, this is from the Wall Street Journal today, 660 of its 2,232 schools had failed to meet federal No Child Left Behind progress goals, just half the number that didn't make progress last year. Now that sounds like an improvement, right? Half as many schools failing. Oh, isn't this wonderful? Well, it turns out, this is June Kronholz wrote this piece for the Wall Street Journal. Today's page, 8-4. But from one year to the next, the Education Department allowed North Carolina to make 11 changes to the rules that the state uses to determine what its schools must do to meet the yearly target. One of those changes alone resulted in 10% more schools passing this year than last, says the state's testing office. In other words, they're rigging the criteria. They don't want to get rid of the law because it's very profitable for these corporations that are inserting themselves into our educational process. And frankly, it gives the federal government, in my opinion, more power than it should have in local education. And they don't want to get rid of the law because it's a honeypot, you know. They want to make it look good so they can continue to sell it. Other changes, the article notes, other changes seem designed to make it easier for schools and districts to pass federal requirements and come as state legislators and voters are growing angry that so many schools are failing. She says, at the same time, at least 35 states have amended the rules that determine which schools pass and which fail. And No Child Left Behind, the Scam of the Month Award, I would say. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. Tom in Minneapolis, Minnesota on
there
the line.
Go.
Hey, Tom, how are you doing today?
Good. Hey, I just wanted to help you out here when you were talking about that corn syrup thing with the corporations, and you were saying, well, they'll dismiss it like a conspiracy. You didn't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but actually, like what Bill Clinton said, it's not a conspiracy if it's all out in the open.
Yeah.
It's a conspiracy if it's a secret. And these guys are doing all this in broad daylight. So when they were just like with the election this year being rigged by the electronic machines, oh, you liberals, you know, conspiracy. No, it's out in the open that Republican contributors, conflict of interest. This
sure.
You're not hiding it.
Yeah.
And the same with Halliburton. That's not a conspiracy. It's all in the open.
Yeah, good point. We're not talking about who killed Kennedy here.
Yeah, I mean, so that's what I always tell them when they bring that up. I say, no, you guys are so bold and your hubris is so out of control. You're just right in broad daylight.
Yeah. Yeah, good point, Tom. Thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Good point, well made. It's and the thing with the corn syrup, in the past I've actually done whole segments on it where I've shared with you the statistics and the statistical information. It's there, and I think it's pretty reasonable. It's pretty scary stuff. So, Tom, thank you very much for that call. Good to hear from you. Helen Caldicott, remember Helen Caldicott? The first time that I heard her must have been 20 years ago, I think. I mean, she's been on the scene for a long time talking about nuclear proliferation. Back during the Cold War, she was, very alarmed. You know, the nuclear clock was counting down, and she was very concerned about all the radiation. More recently, she's been very outspoken about depleted uranium, about the fact that in Iraq we have seen now since the end of the 1991 Gulf War, and, of course, many of our veterans coming back suffering these same problems. The effect of depleted uranium poisoning, both the chemical effect, and the stuff is a toxin, just like lead is. You know, it's a heavy element. It hits the kidneys very hard in particular. But also the problem of birth defects and leukemia and the kind of normal radiation associated consequences that you would expect to see, the Chernobyl effect kinds of things. Birth defects just exploding in Iraq over the last decade since we dropped so much depleted uranium on the fleeing Iraqi troops in 1991. The same thing is happening now in Kosovo and Serbia, where we use depleted uranium. We have now fought three nuclear wars. Four, if you count the most recent Iraqi war, the second Iraqi war, where we dropped nuclear material, that is used up uranium left over from nuclear power plants, on people, on other countries. We're not dropping it on our own country. We're dropping it on other countries. And depleted uranium has a half-life of, as I recall, 2.4 billion years. It might be 3.5 billion years. It's one or the other, but it's longer than you or I will remember. It's going to be around for a long, long time, contaminating the soil and being in the food cycle and producing these really gruesome and horrific birth defects that they're having all these problems with. So Helen Caldicott is rather concerned. She's Australian, but she lives in the United States and runs the Nuclear Policy Research Institute in Washington, D.C. And but she's a pediatrician, an MD from Australia originally. And she's a little concerned about the outcome of the election. A couple of quotes from her. She did an interview with smh.com.au. I believe it's the Sunday Morning Herald, which is the Sydney newspaper, Sydney, Australia newspaper. And this is the online version of it. She did an interview with them, and she said, this is the most serious election that has ever occurred in the history of the human race, without a scrag of doubt. And then she goes on to say, I don't know if we'll survive the next 4 years. I don't think the Americans have, on the whole, the faintest idea. And I have to say also, I don't think Australians do either. But it's not just the threat from nuclear war. It's the threat of what's happening to the environment, the global warming, which is occurring rapidly now, ozone depletion, species extinction, deforestation. It's the whole thing. And, you know, raising these issues. I mean, because the Bush administration being so in the pocket of large multinational corporations and really, you know, making their environmental decisions based on what's most profitable, making their military decisions even to a large extent based on what's most profitable. She sees this as literally a danger to humanity. She goes on to say, back in January of 1995, now this would have been when Bill Clinton was president, she says, we got to within 10 seconds of nuclear war when former Russian President Boris Yeltsin and the Russians made a mistake and thought they were under attack. The Americans still have a first strike policy to win a nuclear war against Russia, she adds. The weapons are still in place, both in America and Russia. Virtually nobody knows that in this country, and that is a mistake, and that a mistake or a terrorist takeover of the command system on either side, or errors being made, could lead to the end of life on Earth. This is one of the points that, you know, frankly, I'm surprised is not made more often, that the so-called Cold War ended. Although I have some concerns about the direction Russia is going right now. A lot of people do. But nonetheless, the Cold War ended, but we didn't put away the nuclear missiles, and neither did Russia. They're still there. And they, you know, still within a matter of seconds can be programmed to point to Russia or to point to us. And they're aging, and the computers running them are aging. And they may be vulnerable to hacking. They may be vulnerable to terrorists. I mean, this is scary stuff. Helen Caldicott goes on to say, the Bush administration has been able to con the American people with their extremely brilliant propaganda and brainwashing. With the help of the media, they consistently lie. On the whole, the American people don't really understand the dynamics of the right at all. They don't know that Bush et al. Want to go into Iran next, and that they want to dominate the world militarily, and that they want to put weapons into space. She says, I don't think the American public understands. It is a mandate for Bush to do absolutely anything he wants. I'm misquoting. She says, I know people don't like me using this word, but they're fascists. Helen Caldicott weighing in on the modern-day Republican Party. As I said in an earlier hour, there is really a battle going on for the heart and soul of the Republican Party. It's been going on really since the 1960s in a big way. You've got the old-fashioned Republican, let's say, what used to be called the true Republican conservatives, the Everett Dirksons of the world, in some ways the Richard Nixons of the world. Today, they are ridiculed as rhinos, Republicans in name only. You know, Lincoln Chafee, Olympia Snow, Voinovich, George Voinovich. You've got them. And then you've got the neocons, the Wolfowitz, Feith, Pearl, Rumsfeld, Rice crowd, who are really very different than traditional Republicans. They believe in preemptive war. Traditional Republicans, you know, they were the strongest opponents of World War II. They did not want us to get into World War II. They didn't want us to get into World War I. For years and years and years, Republicans, you know, derided Democrats by referring to World War I, World War II, and Vietnam as the Democrat Wars. Or particularly World War I and World War II. You know, that the Democrats were the parties of war. It was the party of wars. And the Republicans were the party of peace. Eisenhower's campaign back in 1952, Eisenhower's campaign, his main campaign theme was all about peace. You know, Eisenhower for peace. Let's, you know, let's end war. I mean, this, of course, he was talking about ending the war in Korea. It's funny because I thought I had the clip here, and apparently I don't. I was just going to play it for you, but no, don't have it. Anyhow, I've played on this program before. I just don't know where it is now. And so you have the situation, and there's this battle going on within the Republican Party. And then the third faction, and this is the faction that scares me the most, because this is the faction that has the most power in the Republican Party. This is the faction represented by George Bush and Karl Rove, not by the neocons and not by the old-fashioned John McCain Republicans. But this is more represented by Bush, by Rove, arguably Giuliani, arguably Schwarzenegger, oddly enough, you know, who represents himself as a moderate. David Dreyer, congressman from California. And these are the guys who basically are in the pockets of big multinational corporations. This is the third faction within the Republican Party. They believe that the merger of big business and government is an acceptable thing, which, of course, is something that would have horrified Barry Goldwater or Everett Dirksen. And in fact, that Dwight D. Eisenhower, as he was leaving office, warned us against. I mean, you know, he just explicitly went out of his way to warn us against it. This is a great danger to us. And but these guys, these corporatists, have this idea that if the corporations will give them the money to stay in power, then they'll give the corporations whatever they want. And so our environmental policy gets dictated by corporations. Our medical policies get dictated by corporations. Look at the influence that the drug companies had on the pharmaceutical provisions of Medicare. Our labor policies, of course, are being dictated by large corporations. In fact, you know, the really scary statistic is that over 90% of all legislation over the last 5 years that has been written and introduced into the House or Senate was written in whole or part by corporate lobbyists. And this is something that this is that third faction of the Republican Party that I think we need to worry about. Let's hear from the old Republican Party. Just a quick clip. This is Dwight Eisenhower.
Councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes.
That's his famous quote about the military-industrial complex, but he continues in his speech.
As we peer into society's future, we, you and I, and our government, must avoid the impulse to live only for today, plundering for our own ease and convenience the precious resources of tomorrow. We cannot mortgage the material assets of our grandchildren without risking the loss also of their political and spiritual heritage.
And here we have Reagan and Bush, you know, Cheney saying, Reagan taught us that deficits don't matter. You know, running up a $7 trillion deficit. Dwight Eisenhower is rolling in his grave. Here's his final comment on what happens when you do deficit spending like Bush is doing.
We want democracy to survive for all generations to come, not to become the insolvent phantom of tomorrow.
There you go. And you know, Dwight Eisenhower was a true Republican and truly concerned about these issues. I mean, the small R Republican, frankly, in my mind. Fundamentally a good man. But those Republicans, they're such a minority now in the Republican Party, the Dwight Eisenhower Republicans, they're probably, you know, fewer than 5% of the members of Congress. And will the corporatists, what Benito Mussolini called the fascists, those who believe in merging corporate and state interests, will they end up controlling the Republican Party? It looks like it. And it's got a lot of us very concerned. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a Wind feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. This Veterans Day, past and present members of the U.S. Armed Forces are facing many challenges, the most apparent of which is the danger of fighting in Iraq, where 1,100 men and women have lost their lives. Another 4,000 suffered an injury serious enough to retire.
Harvard recently released a study that estimated the number of veterans who have no medical care at about 1.7 million.
David Chasteen is a director of Operation Truth, a nonprofit veterans advocacy group. He served in the Army for 4 years and is now part of the Individual Ready Reserve.
The Bush administration, like a lot of folks, is really good about talking about taking care of soldiers. It's very easy to talk about those sorts of things. It doesn't really cost anything. There are a lot of guys out there with a lot of real issues.
Chasteen says that persistent underfunding has caused many sick or disabled veterans to have to wait for months for care.
Oftentimes we're dead last on the legislative priority list. And, you know, just as an example, in fiscal year 2005, they plan on cutting 10 VA hospitals and a little shy of $1 billion from the VA budget, even though we're still in a war.
As of January 2004, the VA has announced new rules that exclude hundreds of thousands of vets whose incomes are now considered too high to qualify for benefits.
Under the new eligibility requirements, if you make more than, I think it's $26,000 a year, then you're not going to be eligible for a number of VA benefits that you would have been eligible to before. And this obviously amounts to a pretty significant cut for a number of folks who were counting on that medical care, especially for retired folks.
The Army has even tried to refuse benefits, claiming illnesses are due to pre-existing conditions.
Once you're out of the military, the VA only has to provide medical coverage and for ailments that are related to your service. And it's easy for the VA to say, we don't want to deal with this. We think this is a pre-existing condition, and you're not going to receive treatment.
With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
relentlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Somebody in the chat room asked the question, what's the difference between the second and third type of Republicans that I had identified? The second group being the neocons who believe in preemptive power and global domination, and the third group being the corporatists who believe in getting absolutely in bed with corporations and essentially turning the commons, that stuff that we all collectively own and administer through our government, over to them so that we don't control it anymore, but the ownership class in America, that top 10% of Americans who own 90% of everything in America, owns it. And my answer to that, and I said it on the message board in the chat room, but it bears repeating on the air because, you know, if somebody in the chat room has the question, I think probably a lot of people have the question. The answer is that the neocons are utopianists. They really they're sort of like the Bolsheviks, you know, who initiated what ultimately became the communist revolution some would say went wrong when Stalin took over. But the Bolsheviks and the Trotskyites, you know, the very early revolutionaries believed that in overthrowing the Tsar and instituting a government based on the writings of Karl Marx, that they were going to create a better Russia, that they were going to create a better world. They were true believers in a utopian ideal. They were utopianists. And that's what's true of the neocons. They really believe that if they could just take over Iraq and remake it in their image, that it would be a shining star, a bright example for the rest of the world. And they've pretty effectively contaminated George Bush with their thinking, by the way. I mean, you know, he's bought this line, hook, line, and sinker. But the third group, the corporatists, what Mussolini would refer to as the fascists, they're pragmatists. They're not talking about let's make a wonderful world that works for everybody and, you know, an unfettered capitalism will solve all problems and stuff like that. No, they're just about power. They're just about, you know, being in charge and getting richer day by day. And doesn't much matter who gets stepped on if that's what it takes to get richer. And so that's. And then, of course, as I said, there you've got the first group, which is the old-fashioned Republicans. You know, Olympia Snow, George Voinovich, and there are a few of them out there who still actually believe in a political party and political dialogue and opposition in the American form of government. John McCain, I think, is one of those. So there's interesting times in the Republican Party. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today, to Ira Gravatt for showing up and engineering it, to Brad Walrod for our music, to Shelby LePre for our streaming us around the planet on radiopower.org, to our sponsors, in particular Healing Hollers, a new one, healin-hollers.com. And thanks to you for listening, and to the folks in our chat room. See you tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.